to the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And we're back out at Salem Stadium here in beautiful southwestern Virginia, the Roanoke Valley. A great day for everybody to enjoy football, not just for the game to be played. As Keith mentioned earlier, any day is a great day for football. However, this is a particularly good one here as we come up on Stag Bowl 36. Wisconsin-Whitewater won the toss and deferred, so they will be putting their defense out there in the first quarter or after the opening kickoff, and Mount Union will take the ball. And Keith, we got a couple of minutes here. Let's talk about keys to the game for both sides.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you look at Mount Union, you look at what Nate Kmic can do, and the 2,700 yards this season, the 42 touchdowns is what jumps off the page. But I think really the key for both sides is what happens with Greg McKaylee, the quarterback for Mount Union. He's a guy who's been able to make great decisions in the passing game, 75% completion rate. He certainly hasn't had any problems in that department. But it's also because he hasn't been pressured a lot, and it's really a tribute to the Mount Union offensive line. Really, Luke Summers, the tackle, was the only guy who had starting experience coming into the year, and they basically had a brand new line and were still able to keep defenders off of him. And, you know, Whitewater, their strength is along the defensive line, and they have a couple of great ends in John Baldwin and Anthony White. And if those two guys can get pressure on Greg McKaylee, you know, they can change this game up a little bit. Greg McKaylee hasn't shown a tendency in the past to throw the ball away. He's the type of guy who likes to tuck it and run, try to make something happen, scramble around in the backfield. So if they can get to him, you know, they could force some mistakes, and that happened a little bit in the first half last year, and that was sort of a big turning point in the game. So I think the key really is what is the offensive line for Mount Union able to keep the Whitewater defensive line off Greg McKaylee.
Jeff Shebler to kick off for the Warhawks. Kicking from left to right here in the first quarter, and the ball is taken by Petruzzello at his own 5, cutting to the right side to the 15 to the 20 before he's touched and then brought down right away on the hit, number 24, Antoine Anderson. Is that right on special teams? Did I read that correctly? Or did we get Gregory Arnold, the freshman linebacker at Big Bend, Wisconsin, in there as well? Let's go over the starting offense for the Purple Raiders. They go across the front. 6'5", 306-pound junior tackle, Caleb Crowell. A 6'1", 295-pound senior guard, James Bird. The center, Mike Nitz, 6'2", 285. Sam Guerrero, guard, 6'0", 260. And Luke Summers, the All-American at tackle, 6'4", 282. Greg McKaylee in the shotgun. Cecil Shorts, Vince Petruzzello, and a third receiver out there in the three-receiver set for Mount Union, which might want to come out throwing, but instead is going to hand off to Nate Kmic. A good gain on first down up the middle. A gain of 6 for the All-American, and that will bring up second down and short. Whitewater on the defensive side comes out in a 4-3 front. On the ends, it's Anthony White and John Baldwin, 224, 262. In the middle, Wes Hicks gets the start, along with Justin Ankley, 273 and 285. The linebackers on the outside, Max Ford and Kyle Supanowski, Jace Rindall, the All-American first-teamer at middle linebacker. The safeties, Paul Wick and Zach Christofferson, and Jeremy Diebert and All-American Trony Shumpert at the corners for the Warhawks. And second down and 6 here for the Purple Raiders. Back to pass. McKaylee stepping up, looking, and pass complete to the tight end as Reynolds up at the 34-yard line. Actually, that is
Shorts.
That is Cecil Shorts with the catch, and it's a first down for Mount Union.
And we're going to see a lot of Trony Shumpert, I imagine, matched up on Cecil Shorts. Shumpert at 5'8", 162. Doesn't quite have the size that Shorts does at 6 feet, 180. But that's their best cover guy, Trony Shumpert. And Cecil Shorts is clearly Mount Union's best receiver this season. 21 touchdowns, 1,300 yards receiving.
Yeah, Shumpert has been good in run support. He is not necessarily known for his great pass coverage. And here's a handoff to Kmic on first and 10. Gets up to about the 44 for a gain of 5.
Mount Union, of course, starting out early, mixing it up well, run, pass, run. You know, we will see a lot of Nate Kmic, but I think offensively, if they can mix that pass in with Greg McKaylee, and then, of course, a couple times he'll pull it down and run, we'll see that as the game goes on here. You know, that's when Mount Union is really humming, when they're doing both things well.
And Gordon Mann, our pregame host and our producer, reminds us, of course, it's a matchup of All-Americans, Trony Shumpert on Cecil Shorts. They're up at the top of the screen, far to the right, on second down here, and a short 5 under center. There's a back to pass is McKaylee. Plenty of time to throw, looking long over the middle. He's got separation. Shorts in stride, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Purple Raiders.
And he beat Trony Shumpert down the middle of the field. And Cecil Shorts is a guy who has that game-breaking speed. And for Mount Union, want to get off to that early start right down the middle. No safety help at all. And no pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't get pressure on Greg McKaylee, if he can drop back, get his feet set, and loft a perfect pass really over the middle to Cecil Shorts on the deep post, he really only had about a step on Shumpert, but, you know, if that ball had been underthrown at all, it would have been a different play, but it was perfectly laid out there, and a touchdown for Mountain Union.
Shorts' 22nd touchdown reception of the season, and it is an early 6-0 lead for Mountain Union, 13-10 to go here in the first quarter. Ryan Wilk on to attempt the extra point, 65 of 66 this year. Good snap, good hold. Kick is also good. So, 13-10 to go, a minute and 50 seconds into the ball game, and Mount Union has struck first. They lead Wisconsin-Whitewater by the score of 7-0. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today.
NCAA basketball.
Who's your team?
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And back out here at Salem Stadium, where Mount Union has struck first. They lead by the score of 7-0 on a long touchdown pass from Greg McKaylee to Cecil Shorts. And, you know, in the past, if I remember correctly, as Whitewater has gotten out to early leads, and White and Mount Union's gotten off to early leads, but this is about as quick as it's gotten in a while.
Yeah, we haven't seen that necessarily from Mount Union. You know, last season, remember, they went into the half trailing 10-0. And in this game, I know Mount Union wanted to get off to a good start, and I know they wanted to be able to throw the ball. And when you watch this play, you know, as it happened, it's just Cecil Shorts running a post, and it's Greg McKaylee standing back there, almost like pass skeleton, almost like practice, to be quite honest. No pressure on Greg McKaylee. He has at least 5 yards, you know, to step into his throw. And Shorts just gave a little jab step right before he made the post cut and broke it down the middle of the field. And Shumpert just bit just enough. And as a cornerback, when you're out on an island like that, and you get your feet tangled up, you know, almost, I mean, unless you have great recovery speed, you know, against a slow receiver, you're really not going to be able to make up that ground. So what a huge play for Mount Union to get off to that good start. They're going to be able to run the ball a little bit today, but they had to mix the pass in, I think, to get that Whitewater defense off guard.
And Whitewater on the kickoff return up across the 30 to the 35, and that is where Whitewater will start off. They'll go across the front. Left tackle Mike Sherman, 6'0", 280. He's a senior. Matt Weber, the freshman guard, 6'3", 285. Garth Coates, junior at the center, 6'2", 280. Freshman right guard is Robbie Ustruck, 6'2", 306. And Rob Gilbreth at 6'2", 280, senior, is the right tackle. The wide receivers for Whitewater, they come out with three of them. Adam Brandis, Jordan Wells, a 6'0", 185 junior. Aaron Roosh, a 5'10", 176 sophomore. Jeff Donovan in the shotgun, and behind him, Antoine Anderson, the running back. Brandis in motion, now trips to the near side, and a quick pass in the flat, complete to Roosh on first down. Got across the 40, the 45, stiff arms on his way out of bounds, and he's going to be close to the first down as the officiating crew out of the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference spots him 11 yards downfield for the first down. On the defensive side, quickly, the tackles, Clance Liggett and Matt Williamson, Williamson and All-American, Joseph Millings and James Herbert on the outside. And we'll get the rest here as going to the hurry-up is Whitewater. Looking at the far side for Brandis, being shaken out of the pocket. Pass complete to the tight end, Slupski, but for a loss of a couple of yards. Coming up big and making the hit was the tackle, Matt Williamson. The linebackers, Chaz Yoder and Sam Kershaw for Mount Union. The corners, Daryl Ely and Ryan Renbarger. The safeties, Roger Stewart, Chaz Jordan, and Drew McClain.
And right away, we've seen Whitewater come out and get into this hurry-up offense. After the first play, which was a first down for them, on a quick screen, they blocked it well with the wide receivers, and they got out, ran another play right away. This time, they huddled up, so they're going to maybe mix in the no huddle with some quick plays to try to catch Mount Union's defense off guard. And really, that's the story of what's happening right now. Whitewater asked for the ball on defense, gave up a touchdown. Now, what do they do when they get the ball back on offense? Are they going to respond? Are we going to have a slugfest here today, or is it going to be Mountain Union running away with it?
Second down and a long 10. Man in motion is Matt Gifford back to the near side. Here's the handoff to Anderson. He's got room, but flags fly, and this play is whistled dead.
He sure had room to run there.
Before the ball is snapped, false start. Number 3 of the offense. 5-yard penalty remains second down.
Aaron Roush, the wide receiver, called on the false start there. It'll knock him back another 5. It'll be now second down and 15 and a half.
And when you're back a step already, you're down 7, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot with penalties. You know, Whitewater wants to build a little bit of momentum on this drive, and they came out with that first play, got a first down right away, and then now we've seen, you know, one play for no gain and then a 5-yard penalty.
Max Wazikowski, the fullback, onto the field for the first time. Lined up alongside Donovan, the shotgun. Donovan calling signals. Now steps back. 3-step drop out of the shotgun. Chased up out of the pocket. Got a blocker in front of him. Wazikowski gets a block for him, and he gets back up a gain of about 5. It'll be third down and 10.
And it looked like it was Joseph Millings. Actually, it was James Herbert who tracked him down from behind to help out on that tackle. But, you know, Donovan is one of these quarterbacks, Pat, and you've seen him play, but he's one of these guys who his numbers aren't really overwhelming, but he's just the guy that makes the kind of plays that Whitewater needs for them to win games, whether it's running the ball, whether it's, you know, putting together a nice passing drive right before the half, that sort of thing. He's been able to do it for them this season.
Yeah, he's not the kind of guy like Danny Jones who's going to win you a game with his legs, but he's not going to lose you a game with his immobility. And he got 4.5. It'll be third down and 11. Back to pass on third down. Pass complete to Brandis, short of the first down. Dives for the sticks and is stepped out of bounds. Well short of the first down marker, up to about the 46-yard line, where it will be fourth down and 3.
And right there on the Whitewater sideline, they certainly weren't happy about that, because they saw the effort that was made to get the first down.
Right in front of the Whitewater bench.
I want to say it's a risky call, because you're throwing the ball, you know, 5 yards in front of the first down marker, and then depending on your receiver to get those yards. But the thing that works well about that is that cornerbacks are giving that route up, because they want to just come up and make the tackle.
Chris Rosholt on to punt. Mount Union receiver waiting back at his own 10-yard line. Kick is away. It is a high kick angled towards the sidelines. Fair catch signaled for, and coming up under it is Petrozello at the 19-yard line. That's where Mount Union will start off, with the score 7-0. The Purple Raiders in the lead with 10:41 to go here in the first quarter.
And now you got to see, as a Whitewater defense, and particularly Troney Shumpert, how do these guys respond on the second drive? Come out a little jittery early. You know, these guys, Whitewater's been to Salem before, but a lot of these guys haven't been starters, haven't been on the field. So, you know, you can attribute maybe a little bit of that first drive to being caught off guard with some jitters. But now they have to, you know, put a defensive stop together.
And we'll take a break, and we'll come back out in just a moment. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
Ever wonder where you can hear the latest Division III basketball news?
Welcome to the big show.
That's Hoopsville, the only show dedicated to Division III basketball in the world. You can tune in to where coaches, players, fans, and even us commentators chat about the week that was and the week that will be. So tune into Hoopsville Sunday nights from 6 until 9 Eastern, live on your computer. Or check out the podcast. Because if you want to talk Division III basketball, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Hoopsville is presented by D3Hoops.com and broadcast thanks to Goucher College Radio. For more information, go to www.d3hoops.com/Hoopsville.
Back to the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And we're back here at Salem Stadium, the site of Stag Bowl 36, and we're going to go check down on the sidelines with our sideline reporter, Frank Rossi.
Thanks, guys. I was just on the sideline, Whitewater sideline. Jeff Donovan and his offense came off the field. quite a big Whitewater contingent here, although the student section getting into Jeff Donovan's head, his own fans getting into his head a little bit, barking at him, and he actually acknowledged it with kind of a sour look towards the stands, and then finally somebody barked some support for him, and he smiled and nodded his head yes. So the crowd trying to motivate Whitewater on this sideline.
All right, thanks a lot, Frank Rossi, sideline guy here this afternoon. His second Stag Bowl with us. Thank him for coming back after the way the weather treated him last year. It's a much nicer day to be on the sidelines. And first and 10 here for Mount Union from their own 19-yard line. Hit as he releases it, but pass complete. Complete out near midfield and finally brought down deep downfield is by, is that Luke Hibner? That must be Kyle Supanoski all the way downfield on the tackle. And the reception, of course, is Chad Reynolds, the tight end.
Yeah, and Mount Union now just spreading the field and putting the pressure on the Whitewater defense, and that's one thing we've seen in the past couple weeks for Mount Union, that they have the talent with Shorts on the one side, but they also have Vince Petrozello and Chad Reynolds, two other guys who are very capable of getting upfield and making plays.
They did get a little bit of pressure on McKaylee, but was hit right after he released the ball. And now McKaylee comes up, Bark signals, he's got two receivers to the near side, one to the far side, Nate Kamik alongside him. Gives the handoff to Kamik, cuts to the left side, tries to get away, and doesn't get much there. Paul Wick slowed him down just enough that Jace Rindle could come up and level him along with Justin Ankley.
And one thing you'll see, you know, it wasn't too prominent on that play, but I did see Cecil Shorts get down in there and take on a linebacker, and you don't necessarily always see that from wide receivers, or you see wide receivers get assigned to block a linebacker, and they really don't get a good stick on him. And that time, you know, Cecil Shorts got in there. And Mountain Union asks a lot of their receivers. When they're not involved in the passing game, those guys have to be blocking downfield. And if you watch a lot of Nate Kamik's highlights, you'll see a receiver downfield mauling somebody.
And a tight end usually as well. Man in motion towards the near side for Mount Union. That's Trevor Bruni. Now back to pass is McKaylee stepping up, looking long over the middle again for Shorts. And again, Shorts into the end zone for a touchdown. Another long touchdown catch for Cecil Shorts. A 42-yard strike for another six.
And it's just another post route. Cecil Shorts hardly looks like he's even running. This time it wasn't on Shumper, but it was on the other cornerback, Jeremy Diebert. Again, just a step behind, but no pressure. A perfectly thrown ball by Greg McKaylee over the middle. It really looks like just passing practice for these guys at this point, because they're not getting any pressure on McKaylee. They're not forcing him to make bad throws, and they're not really in Shorts' back pocket.
So Wilk comes on to attempt his second extra point here in 4 minutes. Snap is good. Kick is on its way, and it is good as well. 14-0 now, 9:15 to go here in the first quarter here in Stag Bowl 36.
And Pat, we had heard rumblings before the game that Larry Karras and the Purple Raiders were going to come out throwing, because Whitewater really beat them up last year up front, and they were able to stop the run game, you know, able to get bodies on Nate Kamik. And the strength of this Whitewater defense, besides that defensive line, is their pursuit, their linebackers, Sipanowski, Rendell, and Ford. All three of those guys are so fast to the ball and such good tacklers that, you know, you're almost beating your head against the wall trying to establish the run against them. And to open it up with the passing game, I think, is certainly a smart move on their part. Obviously going well for Mount Union.
Well, Mr. Defensive Back, how do you what do you do now to adjust to try to contain Cecil Shorts?
This is exactly what Larry Karras wants to do. He wants Whitewater to back off on defense. They'll maybe either umbrella, you know, the two things that's happened on both of those posts is there's been routes over the middle that occupy the safety, so that he just gets the one-on-one coverage on the post versus the cornerback. If you drop the safeties back, if you play too deep and you have safety help on those deep routes, there's going to be a lot of underneath stuff opening up, and then the running lanes for Nate Kamik are going to open up. So Larry, he's just loosening him up right now,
yeah.
And then he's going to come in, you know, right behind. We'll see in the second, third quarters, he'll start running the ball with Nate Kamik, and those running lanes will be there because now the corners are getting nervous. They're backing off.
We talked yesterday, I think, that the secondary is the weakness on Whitewater fairly clearly now.
And Whitewater graduated, remember, I believe, four seniors from last year's secondary. All-American Ben Farley, a guy who had 8 interceptions last season, and they also graduated All-American up front, a guy named by the name of Ryan Agrizovich, who had 16 sacks. So the pressure up front isn't there necessarily, and then the experience in the secondary. And secondary is a lot about experience, just recognizing things as you see them, not just the formations but the routes as they come off the line, you know, things that you've seen before happen in the past. And then part of it, too, is just making plays on the ball. And Cecil Shorts has so much speed that you really have to be in great position.
And you look at the teams that Whitewater has played in the playoffs this year. They played St. John's, which is, didn't have much of an offense this year. They played Willamette, which passed on them with a lot of success, but was primarily a running team. They played Wartburg, which, you know, is not a great offense, just kind of an average team. Then last week, they played Mary Hart Baylor, which only throws if its life depends on it. And now, you know, you're facing the best quarterback in Division III.
And one of the better receivers. I mean, Cecil Shorts came into this game with 70 catches, 1,306 yards, and 21 touchdowns. And I add two more touchdowns to that total.
And the kickoff is taken by Aaron Semplowski at his own 10-yard line. Up the 20, squirts through to the 35, still on his feet, to the 40, gets to the far side. One man behind him and gets knocked out of bounds inside Mount Union territory. A great return up to the 35-yard line.
And that's exactly what Whitewater needed right now. They need to get some kind of spark going. And to have your kick return man bottled up, and then for him to give that extra effort, you know, and squirt out for another, you know, 20, 30 yards, Aaron Semplowski, he just gave his team a boost. Now, let's see if Jeff Donovan and the offense can do something with it. Starting a possession on the 35-yard line, great for offense.
Tyler Almeida, the kickoff man for Mount Union, was the man who knocked him out of bounds. So as you said, excellent field position for the Whitewater offense to start off here. They come out with four receivers. They're going to spread it out with Gifford Wells, Roosh, and Adam Brandis. Antoine Anderson in the backfield. And Donovan out of the shotgun here on first down, man in motion. And here's the toss. No, it's a reverse. And here coming around the other side, it is Aaron Roosh to the 30, the 25. First down, 20, and runs out of bounds at the 20. They get the 17-yard line running behind the block of Mike Sherman.
Yeah, and when you get a tackle out in space like that, and you know, you're the one defender that has to make a tackle, and there's a 280-pound guy in your way, not only do you have to break down and wrap up a receiver type in the open field, but you have a big blocker out in front. That play perfectly executed for Whitewater, and now they've got another first down inside the 20-yard line.
One of the wrinkles in the Whitewater offense we saw them working on earlier this week that hadn't seen in any of the four games I've seen Whitewater this season anyway. Tight end in motion into the backfield. That's the Wazikowski lead block ahead of Anderson. Pulls his way down across the 10. And close to the first down, spotted about the 7-yard line.
Wait, and just when you doubted Whitewater and say these guys aren't going to be able to do anything today, they get down 14-0 in the first 6 minutes. Here they are right back inside the 10-yard line in three, you know, great kickoff return. And then they did that reverse just off an option look. And option coming one way, the reverse came back the other way, and then that play, Antoine Anderson, just a good, tough run up the middle, and now you have Whitewater on the 7-yard line.
Joe Billings finally brought him down, but not till after he had a gain of 9. Corey Robinson and Matt Gifford out to the far side. Gifford in motion. Here's another handoff to Anderson. Anderson dumps his way inside the 5, down inside the 2, and Indy is brought down short of the goal line at about the 1-yard line, where it'll be first and goal for Whitewater.
Well, he looks good, though, doesn't he? I mean, he looks fresh.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who hasn't had to have a whole lot of carries this season. You know, his tally is 166 carries, 1,092 yards, and 11 touchdowns. Lavelle Coppedge got most of the work during the season. He had 285 carries, 1,420 yards, and 21 touchdowns. And you know, course of a 15-game season as a running back, all the hits you take can wear you down, but Antoine Anderson looks great right now.
Double tight end set on first and goal, and another give to Anderson, and Anderson is into the end zone for the Whitewater touchdown.
I mean, he's just hitting the line of scrimmage with a burst, and his first tackler, a lot of energy, and Whitewater right back in this game.
14-6, pending the extra point here with 7:36 to go, and fed by a 55-yard kickoff return, at least unofficially, for Aaron Semplowski.
And we've seen Mount Union pull away from teams before. We've seen them jump on them early, and the other team, the doubt sets in, and they start saying, man, we're going to get beat by Mount Union. And as soon as that Semplowski return happened, you saw the Whitewater sideline light up.
And Shebler's extra point is through.
And, you know, that sideline lit up. One big play on offense with the option look reverse, and bang, three runs by Antoine Anderson. They're back in the end zone. We had a 14-7 game. We are less than 8 minutes in.
Yeah, this is an offensive shootout on a day you know, pretty much tailor-made for throwing the football.
Absolutely. And the question really is, does Whitewater have enough offense to stay? You know, if they can't slow Mountain Union down defensively, I mean, we haven't even seen but one, two carries from Nate Kamik so far. You know, if they can't slow that Mountain Union offense down, they're gonna have to play a tremendous game to match that score for score. Really, what they need to do is slow things down a little bit on defense and give their offense a chance to get back in this.
So 14-7 our score with 7:36 to go here in the first quarter of Stag Bowl 36. Mountain Union came out and struck twice quickly, and then just a four-play 35-yard drive on the other side for Whitewater to cut it to a touchdown.
And, you know, something that's interesting about these games, too, for Division III teams is very few games on live television. You know, sometimes taped and broadcast locally, but very few games on live television. So the rhythm of these games is different than every game these guys have been used to during the season. And you know, when you talk about football and momentum and offense getting in a rhythm, you know, now you get the offense from Mountain Union eager to get back on the field and make plays, and then they have to wait 2 minutes for a TV timeout, something that they don't frequently do. And another thing that's a little different in the Stag Bowl, or a lot different in the Stag Bowl than every other Division III game that led up to this, is that we have instant replay at our disposal.
The first 2 years of instant replay went by without a single play being overturned, and then last year overturned correctly and in a most crucial manner. We have not, to the best of our knowledge, we haven't had a play reviewed this afternoon. Of course, as we know, just because they don't stop the game doesn't mean they're not reviewing it, because they're looking at just about every play.
Yeah, and the guys up here in the booth, it's not like the NFL system where the coaches challenge it. It's a booth review system, and those guys will look at every play. They have every angle that ESPN has available with them to them for reviews.
So Jeff Shebler to kick off. And the kick is away. It is a deep kick angled towards the right side, and coming up under it, take it at the 10-yard line. Cutting back to the near side to the 20. Gets to the left corner around this outside the 20 and 25 before he's finally brought down. And that is where Mount Union will start off after a nice kickoff return by Scott Panchik. A lot of east-west, but still some good field position.
And I should clarify what I said about instant replay. Coaches can't challenge once by using a timeout.
Jared Kiso made the stop. The nickelback, really, for Whitewater.
Our trusty cohort, Gordon Mann, has pointed out a few things for us here early on the broadcast, and one of them is that Mountain Union, which is scoring 46 points per game in the playoffs, has gotten off to some pretty slow starts, and this is by far their fastest start.
They've got McKaylee in the shotgun, three receivers to the far side and one to the near on first and 10. Drops back to pass. The left-handed thrower steps up, throws in the fat, complete, no, a little bit out in front of Trevor Bruni, the fullback, and it goes incomplete. It'll be second and 10.
And, you know, you don't see Greg McKaylee miss a lot of balls, and the wind, no wind here today. I mean, it's dead, so that's all on him and his pass.
First incompletion of the afternoon for either team. Greg McKaylee starting 4 for 4. Jeff Donovan started 3 for 3. It'll be second down and 10 for the Purple Raiders at their own 25-yard line, going right to left across your computer monitor here in the first quarter. Pat Coleman along with Keith McMillan for NCAA.com. Glad you joined us here on Stag Bowl 36. High snap. Here's the handoff in the backfield to Kamik, and he picks his way through the line up to about the 31-yard line before he's brought down by Max Ford, the linebacker.
Mountain Union now giving a quick pass look. You know, taking the shotgun snap, McKaylee would bring the ball up by his ear, make it look like a pass just to get those linebackers to drop off a little bit into their coverages, and then they give the quick draw to Kamik and let him do his work in the middle of the field. And that's a lot of pressure on a linebacker, because you know, the linebackers are responsible so much for run support, but also for dropping into zones and zone coverages.
Trips to the far side and one receiver to the near side for the Purple Raiders here on third down and 3. Shotgun snap. Rudy in the flat. No, McKaylee's got plenty of room to run. He hits the hole at the 35, to the 40, turns the corner to the 45, and tries to spin away from Paul Wick and can't do it. He's down at midfield, but a first down.
And that's one of the things that makes Greg McKaylee such a special player. Not only is he somebody who came into this game averaging, you know, he's completing 76% of his passes coming into this game. He has a great offensive line in front of him. He doesn't get sacked very often. You put all that together, and then he's also the team's second leading rusher. He can get out on design plays or on broken plays and turn them into positive yards.
Just short of midfield, first and 10 at the 49-yard line. Cecil Shorts wide to the near side, an offset I formation behind McKaylee, who's under center. Tight end to the right and a receiver up at the top. And here's a fakes the handoff. McKaylee got plenty of time to throw. Looking near side for Shorts. Hits Shorts, and Shorts gets the foot in and gets out of bounds at the 24-yard line. A first down and a big catch.
And Shorts is running some pretty precise routes. That time, what they call the old Z out. Yeah, Shorts got it starts out, goes straight, makes his move inside like he's breaking toward the post again. And these guys have been burnt twice now on the post, so they're jumping the inside route again. And then Shorts just breaks it out, breaks his post back out, one quick jab step, and breaks it back out to the sideline. And McKaylee gives him just enough room before he gets to the sideline to haul that ball in.
They have Matt McCullough on him now, Jeremy Diebert out of the game. It's McCullough in one corner and Shroney Shumpert on the other. Here's a handoff and hit at the line. Going nowhere is Nate Kamik. Supanowski wraps him up after Rindle stood him up near the line of scrimmage, and it'll be second down and 10.
And that's one reason why Coach Karras and Mount Union wanted to come out passing, because Supanowski, Rindle, and Ford are so quick in pursuit to get to the ball. If you got linebackers that can run, you know, they're going to. Mount Union's going to have to try to hold them off with play action, and they're going to have to try to throw the ball deep a little bit to back them off a little.
Kamik on the afternoon, 5 carries for 29 yards. Over 8,000 for his career. Rolling out to the far side is McKaylee. Now he's going to step up, got room to run. Across the 20, being chased by Supanowski. Can't get the ankle tackle. Got down inside the 10 and inside the 5. Spotted first and goal and at about the 2.5-yard line.
And it was Matt McCullough who was the one who got to him, prevented the touchdown. McKaylee, once he broke the contain, you know, he had a chance to squeeze that in the end zone, and McCullough pushed him out of bounds. You know, this Whitewater defense, very capable of bottling up the run game and tackling Nate Kamik. But what they may not be capable of doing today is covering Cecil Shorts and bottling up Greg McKaylee when a play breaks down.
Petrosello up at the far sideline. Bruni in motion. Player jumped on the right side. Here's a handoff to Kamik straight up the middle for another touchdown. Nate Kamik's first touchdown of the afternoon, and it gives the Purple Raiders a 13-point lead, 20-7.
Three touchdowns on three drives now for Mount Union, and Nate Kamik, a 2-yard touchdown run. Doesn't have a lot of yards so far today.
43rd on the season on the ground, 44th overall.
Yeah, and you know, he doesn't have a lot of yards so far today, but last week Wheaton held him to 8 yards in the first quarter, and then he broke out and then finished with 310 yards. So things going well for Mount Union right now, quite clearly.
Ryan Wilk to attempt the extra point. McKaylee the holder. Good hold. Good kick is on the way, and it is good once again. 4:43 to go here in the first quarter. And it is 21-7. Mount Union with the lead. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with more. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 here on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
Did you know Division III basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them every week?
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, they do. You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Hoopsville is presented thanks to Goucher College Radio and d3hoops.com.
And back out here in Salem, Virginia, the kick is away, and Semplowski under it at his own 5-yard line, straight up the middle to the 20, and hit at the 22-yard line, and brought down by Judd Lutz, the fullback on special teams, makes a big stop.
And now we're going to find out what kind of game this is. Did Whitewater just get one lucky touchdown drive aided by a big kick return, or can they consistently put together drives and match Mount Union drive for drive? I mean, clearly, what we're seeing is Mount Union offensively is going to be a lot of trouble today for the Whitewater defense. The question is, can the Warhawks stay with them offensively?
Donovan out of the shotgun. They switch up, run a double tight end set on the left side, two receivers on the right side on first and 10 from their own 23-yard line. Short drop for Donovan. Donovan rolls to the far side, being chased by Herbert. hits the line of scrimmage and then goes out of bounds after a short game.
You know, it's funny to be down 21-7 at this point. It's hard to get a read on Whitewater's offense. That was the ninth play that they've run today. You know, they haven't even pulled out everything they have in the arsenal for the first quarter, much less the entire game. So, I mean, there's certainly time for them to build that momentum, and the running game looked good for them when they finished off that last drive, but they need to get back in this thing quickly, and if they had a plan to establish the run slowly over the course of this game, they may be getting away from that.
Wells, the receiver in motion towards the far side. One receiver now to each side on second and eight, and here's the handoff to Lavelle Coppedge getting his first call of the afternoon up across the 30. A big gain on second and long will bring up third down at about 2.5.
You know, Coppedge at just 5'8", 180, he's just a little dart. When he gets the ball, he gets in his hole, and he's tough to bring down. You know, you don't want to compare him to Nate Kamik, obviously career-wise, but when you see a guy who has that kind of running ability and makes his decisions quickly and makes his cuts quickly, you know, it bodes well for a good career for Lavelle Coppedge.
Yeah, we saw him with a quick burst straight ahead. He stays in the game. We have not seen him cut since he came back from his injury against St. John's. Slupski, the tight end on the near side, two receivers to the near, looking this way and passing complete to Slupski, threaded it in there. First down across the 40, up ahead to the 42-yard line. Just got it beyond Chaz Yoder, who was on coverage, and a first down for the Warhawks.
It was Sam Kershaw on the tackle, but it was Chaz Yoder who tried to get his hand in there right before it and knocked the pass down. And that's a risk you take sometimes when you're playing coverage, whether you're a linebacker or a defensive back. You know, he just was kind of over the shoulder and tried to swing at it. And if you miss it, you know, you give up a reception. And not only that, you're not in position to make the tackle. So a first down here for the Warhawks.
Warhawks unaccustomed to playing from this far behind. They've given up 21 first quarter points here this afternoon. Had only given up 23 in the first quarter all season. And here's a handoff to Coppedge. And Coppedge is hit for a loss. This time Chaz Yoder making the tackle for loss. And it is second down and long.
And that's the kind of attitude a defensive player has to have. You get beat for a gain one play, you come back right on the next play and make a big tackle.
It'll be second down and 11. Loss of about a foot.
And it was actually both linebackers in the 4-2 set made that tackle. It was Yoder and Kershaw. And, you know, when you can get more than one guy to the ball, it's awful tough to stop.
Donovan out of the shotgun. He's got Roosh to the near side. Gifford in the slot to the far side along with Robinson and Brandis. And here's a pass complete to Roosh. Roosh a little bit off balance at the 47 and goes down right away. It'll be third down.
You know, what you notice about the Warhawks' offense is if Mount Union's going to back off, the Warhawks will take quick reception. They don't mind throwing it in front of the coverage and then taking the yards and then letting their receivers try to run with it. That time Roosh didn't have much room to run because he had to go low to haul that ball in. But they seem to be making a conscious decision that if Mount Union's going to back off them, they'll take the yards.
They show a compact set and now audible and spread it out. Three receivers to the far side, Roosh to the near side. Back to pass, Donovan looking near side for Roosh and overthrows him. Well incomplete. Ely tight on the coverage, and Donovan threw that where nobody was able to catch it.
Yeah, the reason why that design shift really didn't work is because Mountain Union hasn't seen that compact set that they use, a double tight with a wing back. You know, if they had been consistently running that would spark something in your mind as a defense. Oh, this play might be coming. And then they would shift to that trips on one side and the fourth wide receiver here on the other side. But, it didn't really affect. It also wasn't in the right situation.
Well, it wasn't the right personnel either.
Yeah.
Those four receivers are not the same as the fullback, wingback, and tight end.
Yeah, you're looking for a lot of keys like that on defense. What personnel is in the game, what hash mark the ball is on, that type of thing.
And the punt is away. It is angled away from the returner. Gets a nice Whitewater bounce. Picked up on the run at the 10-yard line and run out of bounds with it is Petruzzello as he picked up about 12 yards on the return after it got a nice Whitewater roll.
And, you know, we called Troney Shepard's name earlier in this game for his coverage, but he's also the Rocket Man on the first guy down on the punt formation. He was in on that tackle there. You know, going back to what we were talking about, Pat, as a defender, you know, you're thinking of a lot of keys to what's going to possibly happen, you know, because if you've done your film work and if you've done your tendency work in your defensive meetings, you'll see situations in the game, spots on the field that certain teams like to do things, and you're expecting three or four things that they like to do in this situation. And as soon as you see it as a defender, you recognize it, and you can break a lot more quickly than if it's something you've never seen before.
Petruzzello out wide to the near side, along with Shorts, just to the right of him in the slot. one receiver and a tight end to the far side on first down and 10. McKaylee gives the handoff to Kmic. Kmic has a little bit of a hole on the left side, then it's swallowed up pretty quickly by, looks like, Lane Olson along with Anthony White.
We talked about it a little bit, Pat. Whitewater is certainly capable of bottling up this run. They're certainly capable of tackling Nate Kmic when they get there. Great tacklers. You know, pretty good line up front. Great tacklers in the linebacking core. We have to be able to stop this pass. Now they're in Mount Union's in a kind of a passing situation. You see the formation coming. Can they stop it?
Matt McCullough over on the near side in coverage on Cecil Shorts. McKaylee out of the shotgun. Looking to throw, looking at the other side, and overthrows again Trevor Bruni out of the backfield. Incomplete. It'll be third down and 7.
You know, and even if Bruni had caught that, he was going to get a pretty good lick from Kyle Sapanowski, most likely, because he was right on top of that pass play. And that's what Whitewater needs to do. They're going to back out now in these passing situations. They're going to play more like an umbrella coverage, have all four defensive backs, you know, playing deep coverage, or at least the corners will be playing the outside of the field, and the safeties will be playing the deep middle. The linebackers are fast enough to cover the flats, to cover the backside of the backfield. They just have to be able to make plays on the ball.
A.J. Claycomb and Cecil Shorts to the near side. Chad Reynolds to the far side along with, looks like, Petrozello on third down and 8. McKaylee back to pass. Again, he's got time. Nobody open. Stepping up. Gets away from a tackler and is brought down by Lane Olson real close to the first down marker, but they're going to spot him about a yard short. It'll be fourth down.
And we might see a lot of that. A lot of Greg McKaylee breaking free, because he's not scared to put it down, tuck it, and run it. He's not scared to take on tacklers if he needs an extra couple yards. And on that play, the strong safety for Whitewater, Zach Christofferson, and the free safety, Paul Wick, those guys just got on the hash marks and backed it off. Cecil Shorts ran that post down the middle, and Wick was back there, and Christofferson was back there. So now there's going to be a lot of room for Mount Union to operate in the middle of the field, whether it's run plays, short passes, or Greg McKaylee scrambles.
Jay Carpenter on to punt for just the 12th time this season. And he gets the kick away. It is a high kick. Roosh signals fair catch. And takes it, drops it, and then there's a scramble on the floor for it at the 36-yard line, but Roosh comes back out of the pile with it, and crisis averted for Warhawk fans.
Yeah, the Warhawks cannot have that. To be down 21-7, to finally get a defensive stop, and to fumble the punt. Roosh was lucky he fell right back on it, because this is Whitewater's chance right now to make this into a game. And certainly it's a long game, and that can happen for a long time. Over, you know, you can get back into the game over the course of the entire game, but you don't want to get behind again and give Mount Union a boost like that. You know, like I said, Bruce was very lucky.
Yeah, it was Chaz Jordan who had the best shot at the football, and we have come to the end of the first quarter. It's been a good one for Mount Union fans as the Purple Raiders lead 21-7. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 here on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today. NCAA basketball. Who's your team?
And we're back out here at Stag Bowl 36. Let's go down to the field for Frank Rossi.
Hey, guys. I've been on both sidelines. First, on the Whitewater sideline, their only touchdown came partially as a result of a play they haven't run before this year. I found out the reverse that they ran on their first play out to the kickoff return was the first time they ran that play. I think we're going to see a lot of gadgetry from them on offense. On the Mount Union side of things, Greg McKaylee's taped up his left non-throwing elbow after getting a bit of a bad turf burn. You might have a little immobility in that elbow, but otherwise he'll be fine.
All right, thanks a lot. Hey, Frank, can you clarify? The left elbow for McKaylee is his throwing elbow. Is that right?
He's a
left-handed thrower, so that's his throwing elbow? Okay.
Yes.
All right, thanks a lot, Frank. So that that could be a big deal for McKaylee, and things coming up. We'll keep an eye on when Mount Union comes back out on offense here in a little bit. But right now the Whitewater offense needs to figure out what it's going to do. He mentioned the fact that the reverse is something new. I think we also saw in practice this week, a flanker sweep that we hadn't seen before out of Whitewater, and I'm sure there's some other things in the playbook to come out for this afternoon as well.
You know, and it's interesting because we were watching a little bit of Whitewater's game with Mary Hart Baylor last night with Jimmy Gilardi, who's St. John's offensive coordinator, I believe, and he was saying Whitewater offense pretty vanilla. You know, they do a lot of the same 4 or 5 run plays, a lot of the same pass plays, but they run them so well, you know, and the guys are so big and strong and fast that it's tough to stop them. But as we saw them practice here this week, we've seen a lot of different wrinkles, a lot of, you know, drag routes dragging across the field, a lot of interesting pass plays, and then, you know, the kind of trick plays. And maybe Whitewater feels like they're going to need those if they want to stay in this game.
Whitewater offense coming out to start the second quarter. First quarter stats. Mount Union, 284 yards of total offense in the first 15 minutes compared to 182 for Whitewater. 72 yards rushing, 171 passing. That doesn't add up to 284, but that's what the stats say. And here's first down and 10. Fake the handoff in the backfield. Donovan protects the ball, rolls out to the right. Looking, coming back for the ball. Roosh, complete in Mount Union territory. Gets away from a tackler and then finally chased down by Ely after a gain of about 18 down to the 47 of Mount Union.
That was almost trouble for Darrell Ely trying to do that, you know, the tackle where you just put your arms out and put a shoulder into him. Roosh didn't want to go down that easy. This guy's a trooper. Double move and... Roosh came back to get the ball. Donovan had a lot of time to throw. There was pressure there, but he was able to move out of the pocket a little bit, buy himself some time, get the ball to Roosh for a big gain.
So it'll be first down and 10 for the Warhawks. Jordan Wells in motion towards the far side. Now he comes back. Here's the give in the backfield. That's Anderson. No, that's Coppage to the right side. The 45, inside the 45 to the 44. Makes his first east-west move of the afternoon. He picks up about 5.
Yeah, it was Chaz Yoder there on the tackle, but yeah. Lavelle Coppage, we talked about maybe, you know, he'd been banged up and maybe he didn't have his cut ability. But was made a tackle or miss in the backfield right there. Yeah, in the first quarter now, talking about those stats, Mount Union 14.3 yards per play. Of course, 4 drives, 4 possessions, 3 touchdowns. The major thing, you know, 5 plays of over 20 yards, including the 55-yard touchdown catch for Cecil Schwartz and a 41-yard touchdown catch. His numbers in the first quarter, 4 catches, 136 yards. That's pretty a good game for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Second down and 7. Penalty marker comes out. Pass complete to Slepsky for a gain of a few, but it's not going to help him out much here.
One thing Whitewater has done a nice job of so far is using the whole field.
And it's actually signaled against the Mount Union defense here. Wait for our referee to come up and tell us about it here.
Offside. Defense. Number 6. 5-yard penalty. Still second down.
That's Darrell Ely, the cornerback, called there for the offsides, and it gives Texon 5 yards. It'll now be second down and about 2.
It's awful tough to be offsides when you're a cornerback. even if you're in press coverage, you know.
It's really press coverage, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's how you stay in his back pocket, literally.
Elsewhere from the first quarter, the rushing numbers for Whitewater, of course, Aaron Roosh, 19 yards. On the reverse, Antoine Anderson, 3 carries for 6. Lavelle Coppage had 2 carries in the first quarter for 4 yards. Second down and 2. Donovan up under center. Trips receivers, bunch to the left side. Here's a deep handoff in the backfield to Coppage. Gets the first down. Straight ahead to the 32. Again, a time where the 33, before he's brought down by Chaz Jordan, the free safety. And Keith, another time where I thought Coppage was thinking about making a cut, then elected to go straight forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had the move on there. I think his foot just slipped out from under him. Looks to me like he's got a little bit of that mobility, and you know, he may not be 100%, but if he's most of the way, that's pretty good for him.
Please reset the game clock to 15. Thank you.
I'm going to kick the game clock back up, put a couple seconds on it. 13:15 now left in the second quarter. Here in Stag Bowl 36, Mountain Union with the lead on Wisconsin Whitewater 21-7. Pat Coleman, Keith McMillan, Frank Rossi on the sidelines, Gordon Mann, a producer here this afternoon, on NCAA.com, our 10th consecutive Stag Bowl on the Internet. Back to pass is Donovan, faked it to Coppage in the backfield, stepping up plenty of room on the near side, looking for Roosh in double coverage, and he comes down with the ball, but he's out of bounds. Incomplete. It'll be second down.
And the field judge right on top of that call. First of all, great call. Second of all, good coverage from Mount Union to have it bracketed with two receivers, you know, two defensive backs. Mountain Union, of course, runs that 4-2-5 defense, and they have five defensive backs on the field at all times, so you know they can switch easily from the nickel run support, and they played it underneath. It was that same Z out route we talked about, shorts running, and you know he had it. He was there. The ball was there. And he just had two defensive backs able to make the play. The defensive backs were Ryan Renbarger, the cornerback, who's playing a little bit hurt today, and the weak safety, Roger Stewart.
So it'll be second down and 10 for the Warhawks at the 33 of Mount Union. Donovan barking out signals at Gifford. Here's a pick pass to Gifford in the flat. Couple of receivers out blocking in front of him. Got some room across the 30, 25. Spot him down to the 23, which is going to be real close to the first down. They're on the side with the sticks. It is the first down beyond the marker.
You know, take away what Mountain Union has done against Whitewater's defense. Whitewater's offense having a pretty good game. I mean, they haven't had the ball a ton, and it's been hard to establish that. But that pass that was caught out of bounds was only Jeff Donovan's second incompletion. You know, they're spreading the field well, using the middle of the field. They're using the flat. They're using screens. They've used a reverse so far. You know, they're establishing what they want to do. It's hard to keep pace when your defense is giving up 21 points already.
Two receivers to the near side now. Adam Brandis in motion comes back this way along with Roosh, going right to left here in the second quarter. And here's a handoff to Coppage. Coppage tripped up for the ankle tackle from behind after a gain of one. It'll be second down.
And you know, you look at those numbers for Whitewater, total offense in the first quarter, 83 yards. That's usually a pretty good day, right? On the pace for about 320-something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good offensive day for a lot of teams. But if the other team's got 243 yards total offense in the first quarter, like I said, it's just tough to keep pace.
You know, Mount Union gave up over 300 yards of total offense to Wheaton last week, and that was the high that they had allowed all season. Obviously, Whitewater doesn't need yards, they need points, but they could end up threatening both of those. Here's a pass over the middle, looking complete to Wells for the first down inside the five. Wells goes up high, right behind the defender, Chaz Jordan, and comes down with a big catch.
Yeah, he had to go up and get it, and Jordan hit him low right on the legs as Wells left the ground. And as a receiver, you know, you go up in the air, you're uncertain if you're going to come down on your feet. You know, you're worried about coming down, but you also got to hold on to the ball. And that's a skill that is not natural. You know, that's something that you just learn. You have to be able to concentrate on.
I like the play calling by Jim Zabrowski here so far. Very balanced as well. 20 offensive snaps, 10 runs, 10 passes. Here's the handoff to Coppage. Coppage hits the line and goes nowhere. No push on the left side, and it was Sam Kershaw along with Roger Stewart making the stop.
Well, you know, one reason why Jeff Donovan's off to such a good start passing the ball is because the Whitewater tackles, Mike Sherman and Rob Gilbreth, I guess the other one who's in the game, those guys doing a nice job on the Mountain Union defensive tackles, particularly Sherman on James Herbert, but also Joseph Billings has been a great rusher on the other side. You know, in a lot of other games, those guys are getting pressure.
Rob Gilbreth had a really good game against the great defensive end for Willamette as well. And they come out with a double tight end set here with a receiver on each side, Gifford to the far, and Brandis on the near sideline. Nope, other way around, and it is looking for Gifford, and Gifford up with Ely, and it's incomplete. Ely with great coverage, comes away with the football, but didn't make the catch or the interception inbounds.
Yeah, and you know, when you run a play like that, it's sort of a short fade in the middle of the end zone, but on the sideline, you know, you want to run it so only your receiver can come down with it. And actually, Darrell Ely went up and took it away in the air, but when he came down, he was out of bounds.
I think he was looking to go to Adam Brandis on the other side. Donovan goes and talks to him as Brandis goes off the field. Don't know if there was a miscommunication or Brandis ran the wrong route, but instead Donovan was forced to throw to his only other receiver who was locked up in tight coverage. Third down and goal from the five. Benson, the wide receiver, in motion towards the far side as they spread it out. Donovan, time to throw, stepping up. Herbert, make that. Millings brings it down after a short gain. It's going to be fourth down and goal from the four-yard line, and Jeff Shepler comes on right away. This is one position where Whitewater has been very conservative this year on fourth down and short field goal situations because Shepler has four field goals of under 20 yards.
Yeah, and to be honest with you right here, you know, it wouldn't be outrageous to see them, you know, try to go for the points because they're inside the four-yard line. But at the same time, you know, you got to get points on the board, 21-10. You know, if they can't get defensive stops, it's not going to matter anyway.
Shepler's perfect from inside 30 yards. This is a 21-yarder, and the kick is through the uprights. The All-American cuts the lead to 11 points, 21-10, with 9:50 to go
here in the second quarter. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more after this. You are listening to Stag Bowl 36 from NCAA.com.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today. NCAA basketball. Who's your team?
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And Frank Rossi, our sideline guy here as well this afternoon, in Stag Bowl 36. And Whitewater has cut the lead by the Purple Raiders from 21-7 to 21-10 off a 21-yard Jeff Shepler field goal. And Keith, a good drive in terms of being able to sustain a drive, the first sustained drive on the afternoon for Whitewater, proves that they can move the ball on Mount Union and get some points, even though they only came away with three.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Whitewater needs to do, just to get themselves in this game mentally, for the defense to believe, all right, if we come up with a stop, the offense is going to do something with it, and for the offense to believe that, okay, we can put a drive together, we can run our offense, and they pretty much establish themselves pretty well here. Again, 10 points at this point in a game isn't bad. But you have to get your defense to start getting some stops. One of the interesting things that stood out to me on the third down play, when the pass routes broke down and we saw Jeff Donovan take off for the end zone, Joseph Millings did a nice job of backtracking on that play and wrapping up Donovan's legs. But that's the difference between Danny Jones right now for the Warhawks and Jeff Donovan, a guy who's mobile. He can move a little bit, but Danny Jones was the type of guy who, when he tucked it and ran, he might have been able to squeeze it to the end zone on that play.
Danny Jones last year in the Stag Bowl, 9 for 24 passing, Donovan 8 for 11. Of course, significantly different afternoons and evenings, weather conditions. Played in a cold rain last year around near the 35-degree mark.
Start time was different. It was dark early in that game.
And here is a deep kickoff for Shevler, and Petrozella comes up, takes it, fakes the handoff at the 10, come to the near side, the 20, and spins and is brought down at the 25. On the tackle for Whitewater was Matt McCullough, the defensive back who's been getting some time here this afternoon after Cecil Shorts burned both of the other corners early on.
Yeah, and McCullough's the guy who's listed as the backup free safety, so, for them to move him over to cornerback when they go back out on defense, certainly, they had a concern with the other corners.
They have Jeremy Diebert and Schumpert both on the field right now. It is 9:44 to go here in the second quarter and 21-10 as the signal against Mount Union. Mm-hmm. Let's see what they come out and say here. They gave us the illegal motion here. Illegal motion.
Yeah, I didn't see a flag down on the kickoff.
Me either.
The officials are having a little confab at the 28-yard line, so.
Lance Leipold on the far sidelines talking to the official.
The receiving team is offside on the play. 5-yard penalty. We will re-kick.
I tell you, Mount Union went through a stretch early in the season, and not so much so far in the playoffs, but where they had just, racked up huge penalty numbers. And, to be offsides, for a cornerback to be offsides like Ely was on the last drive, and then to be offsides on a kickoff? I mean, those are mental mistakes. Those aren't just,
that's
odd.
The type of stuff that's going to incense Larry Karras the same way it would incense Lance Leipold if his team was doing it. But, the thing you have to remember about these two teams is these are fairly young teams. Now, they have 14 games under their belt this season in terms of experience, but these are not guys necessarily in a lot of positions that have played 3 and 4 seasons. Mount Union has that at quarterback and running back, but a lot of their guys on special teams are young guys.
We've got an update from Frank Rossi who tells us that Mount Union weak safety Roger Stewart is having his left knee looked at on the sidelines. We'll see if he comes back in when Mount Union goes back out on defense here in a little bit, but Jeff Shevler is going to
kickoff again, this time from the 35-yard line. Petruzzo waiting back at his own 2, and he comes over to this middle and takes it at the 2-yard line. Got a block in front of him to the 15, to the 20, and loses steps on the sideline, steps out at the 22-yard line. Petruzzo looking for a late hit flag on Matt McCullough. But, you know, I don't think it was very clear that that Petruzzo had stepped out of bounds.
Right, the problem is if you keep running, like the play is still going on, how is the defender supposed to know that he's not supposed to tap?
Thank you, Mr. Defender. No, I hear you. I just
promised I would have been the same for the offense. Choose whether or not you want to believe. So Mount Union's 4 drives so far, 4 plays, 78 yards, 3 plays, 81 yards. They had to punt and then another touchdown drive so far. This is their 5th drive, of course, and Whitewater has 1 defensive stop so far.
McKaylee comes up, changes the play at the line of scrimmage. Shorts comes in motion behind the quarterback, and here's a handoff to Kamik. Kamik tries to spin off a tackler. Rindall loses the handle on him, but he only gets a couple more yards out of it before the Warhawks wrap him up. It'll be 2nd down and about 8.
You know, another thing that tells you what kind of player Greg McKaylee is, remember, he's our Gagliardi Trophy winner. The guy is a phenomenal student, you know, 3.84 grade point average in math and physics. Got all the tools as far as a passer. On this play, he makes the handoff, then gets up and tries to block the weak side linebacker,
yeah.
Max Ford, on that play. He's a guy who just loves football. He just wants to get after it.
He'll be in the shotgun here on 2nd down and 7. Petruzzo out wide to the left side, short slot to the left. Receiver to the near side is A.J. Claycomb. And, of course, Kamik in the backfield. Dropping back to pass is McKaylee. McKaylee looking to the near side. Doug looking for not sure who, and ends up in almost Max Ford's hands. Max Ford and Trony Shumpert, 2 Whitewater defenders, the closest to the ball.
Yeah, that's a really poorly thrown ball, and you don't see a lot of those from McKaylee. But that one, it looked like it came off his hand. Either a little bit too high or a little bit too low. I mean, the ball went low, but the way it came off his hand certainly wasn't exactly right, because he had a receiver in that line of sight, but the ball was about 10, 15 yards short.
Extra defensive back. No, I guess an extra linebacker here. Lane Olson taking up kind of a nickel back position here on 3rd down and 7. McKaylee looking over the sidelines, getting the signal. Play clock down to 3-2. Gets the snap off with a 2nd to spare. No flag out. Stepping up. Looking to throw ball on the floor. And he picks it up and he's brought down. It is a loss of 3. It'll be 4th down. And Sam Markham goes in there and gets the pressure on him and forces him to put the ball on the turf.
Yeah, and the freshman defensive end is sort of kicking himself, because first he had a chance to get at McKaylee and grab him by the jersey and pull him down. He didn't get him. Then he kind of tapped the ball out, and he thought he could fall on the ball, and he wasn't able to do that as well. Still a great play for the Whitewater defense to make it a 3rd down conversion. And yeah, if Greg McKaylee is having an issue with that elbow, the way he was holding the ball certainly didn't help.
So Mount Union to punt for the 2nd time this afternoon. Carpenter back inside his own 10. Gets the kick away against a strong Whitewater rush. Roosh takes it at the 45. He's got some room. A nice block in the backfield. There's a penalty marker down, however, back at the site of the punt. It's going to go inside. Is that a roughing the punter?
And that would be a tremendously bad break for the Warhawks.
Yep. That's the signal immediately from the referee. This is coming back.
You know, for them to get a stop on a 3rd down, and it's only their 2nd stop of the day, and then to give it back on a roughing the punter penalty, that's tough. Yeah. We took a look at the replay here in the booth, and we certainly we didn't really see it. Actually, Antoine Anderson was pulled down on that play, and it looked like
personal foul, roughing the kicker on the defense. 15-yard penalty, automatic, 1st down.
That's a turning point play in the game here, because Whitewater needs defensive stops. But not only that, they were going to have great field position starting off at about midfield. And really what happened there, it was 13 for Whitewater who ran into him. But the pileup, that's Jay Hancock, who's a backup fullback. But the pileup was caused by Antoine Anderson being pulled down by a Mount Union blocker. Pulled him down, tripped Hancock, and then Hancock sort of fell over him. And that when they look at that one on film, and Leipold is somewhere short of irate in terms of how he's talking to the officials about this one, because he probably saw his guy get pulled down, and certainly that was not a favorable call for his side.
McKaylee up under center on 1st down and 10. Fakes the handoff in the backfield, steps up, Got time. Got time. No one to throw to. Looking long for Shorts and can't get it to him. Shorts on excellent coverage this time by Jeremy Diebert. Kept him away from the football, and McKaylee just basically had to throw it away, overthrow everybody.
Yeah, and he said, "Well, if I'm going to throw it near somebody, I'll throw it near Cecil Shorts." But Jeremy Diebert, here's a guy who's beaten for a touchdown on the second drive, was out of the game for a little bit, and now he's back in the game, and that was the best coverage we've seen him play all day. So it tells you a little bit about the Warhawks' mentality. These are not the type of kids that give up or that see the bad things that happen. They're right back on this thing defensively.
Compact set here on second down and 10, and now Mountain Union splits it out. They put Shorts up to the far side. McKaylee steps back in the shotgun. Here's the give to Kamik. Kamik gets forward for a couple yards up to the 39, but not much more. It'll be second down and about 8.5.
Look at that, though. The Warhawks very capable, as we keep saying, of bottling Mountain Union's run game up defensively because they have the size and skill up front to clog up the run lanes. Justin Ankley and Wes Hicks in the middle of the defense right there. And then you add the linebackers that get to the, you know, they read the play, read and react very quickly. And now Mountain Union back in another third and long situation. Can Whitewater pull off another stop?
9 carries for 32 yards on the afternoon unofficially for Nate Kamik. And it's third down and 8. McKaylee out of the shotgun. Petrozella to the near side, 2 receivers to the far side from his own 38-yard line. 3-step drop, looking left side, looking long left side, got Shorts open, and nice acrobatic catch once again in between and beyond 2 defenders down to the 35 of the Warhawks.
It was Paul Wick and Jeremy Diebert over there, and they sort of had it bracketed, and it was not really terrible coverage. McKaylee had to put that in a perfect spot, and Shorts had to turn his body around and reach his arms up in the air to get it. And that's tough because Whitewater had everything else covered on that play. There really wasn't a lot of places to go with the ball. And now we go back to that rough in the punter call. You know, if Whitewater had been able to get off the field right there, that wouldn't have been such a big point in the game.
McKaylee out of the shotgun here, first and 10. Now steps up, calling an audible. He's got 2 receivers to the near side. Shorts and Petrozella communicate with each other on that side of the field. And here's a handoff to Kamik, trying to get around the left side and brought down right at the line of scrimmage by Max Ford, the linebacker. Brought him down for, I think he spotted for a loss or basically no gain.
That's what we keep talking about with these guys, the group of linebackers and how quick they are in pursuit. They read, react, and they get to the ball, and then they finish the tackles. Max Ford, you know, he had to lay out a little bit for that one, but he was able to wrap Kamik up at the legs.
It was second and 10, about 10.5. Clay Combe, the receiver, out wide to the near side, along with Shorts. McKaylee out of the shotgun here. On second down, looking near side for Shorts underneath, and coming up right away to make the hit is Troney Shumpert after basically a gain of a couple. It'll be third down and about 6. And that's what Shumpert's good at.
Yeah, so you mentioned it earlier, Pat. Shumpert is good in run support, and he's a heck of a tackler for a guy to be 162 pounds. But he, as soon as he read that, he came up and got it. And Gordon Mann has mentioned to us that you see a lot of times when Cecil Shorts is in the slot, Whitewater will have a linebacker over him. And that's a pretty good sign that they're playing in zone, and the linebacker will be responsible for a short area, but they'll have safety help over the top.
Spreading it out with an empty backfield, and it looks like McKaylee is going to come over and take timeout. So with 4:59 to go here in the second quarter, Mountain Union takes its first timeout of the afternoon. The Purple Raiders lead the Warhawks by the score of 21-10. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more after this. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the Internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
Now back to the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And on the sideline is Frank Rossi, and he's got an update for us. Frank, go ahead.
Guys, you mentioned the injury to safety Roger Stewart. They numbed the area, taped up the left knee pretty well, and he's back walking the sidelines. He'll be back in the game, definitely. Trevor Bruni came off with a left knee injury. They worked on that for a little while. He tried to stand up, sat back down, worked on it some more, and he wants to go back into the game as well.
Thanks a lot, Frank. You know, if you're a Mount Union player, you're up 21-10 now in pursuit of your 10th national championship. I think either of those guys definitely itching to get back in the game.
Yeah, you know, that's like saying you want to blink when you wake up or you want to breathe or something like
that.
Of course, these football players want to get back into a championship game. And, you know, it's funny. The training staffs really have a big responsibility when a guy's hurt. You know, all the players, unless they really, really can't go, they're going to want to go back in. And the training staffs do have a responsibility to not let these guys hurt themselves more.
You're facing a third down and about a six here for Mount Union. McKaylee had an empty backfield. Everybody spread out. Had Nate Kamik kind of lined up as a wing back just to the right of the tight end. And looked over to the sidelines and took the first time out of the second half. They're going to come back out and spread it out once again. At least that's what they're going to show here. A little more compact, but five receivers out there in an empty backfield with McKaylee.
Whitewater does have one third down stop already on this drive, but gave it back on the rough and the punter call on fourth.
McKaylee out of the shotgun, takes a three-step drop, looking to throw, looking and pass complete to Petrozzolo, and he's knocked out of bounds. First down, inside the 10, down to the 7, first and goal.
Yeah, you know, one thing you see when Mount Union takes a timeout before a key third down play, and obviously they identify this as a key point in the game as well. You know they're going to come out with an interesting, well-drawn-up play, and the question is, can they execute it? And basically all it was McKaylee dropping back, looking at the bunch side. The bunch side was where Cecil Shorts was. When you have three receivers that tight, Whitewater has to put a lot of coverage over there to take care of all three of those receivers. And then they got Petrozzolo singled up on the other side, and Greg McKaylee made a great throw to him.
Yep, paid the price, took a shot from Wes Hicks, but back out here, a first down and goal. And here's the handoff, and a give inside the five-yard line. Anthony White brings him down short of the end zone. It'll be second down and goal.
You know, this drive still, it's not over for Whitewater. And we saw them last year right there at that same end zone, at the same Salem Stadium, make a goal line stand. That would be huge for them here. Holding to a field goal would keep it a two-touchdown game. And anything Whitewater could do, of course, to salvage this drive since the penalty extended it certainly would be good for their momentum.
Second down and goal from just outside the three-yard line. Man in motion towards the near side. Kamik in the backfield with McKaylee. Kamik gets the call. Going left side, and he is stopped well behind the line of scrimmage. Coming up to make the stop, Justin Ankley once again with a big tackle for loss back at the six.
Boy, doesn't it always seem like the Warhawks defense has somebody on the defensive line in the interior? You know, it was Ryan Kleppe a few years ago, but somebody that can just break through it and bust up a running play real easily. And that time, you know, Justin Ankley broke through it and had Kamik in the backfield. Kamik never had a chance.
Kleppe, then Ryan Grizovich, and now Justin Ankley with his 12th tackle for loss. I guess maybe 13th. I think he had one earlier. He came into the game with 11.
Yeah, he may not have had a bigger one. I mean, if Mount Union looked like they're in a passing situation here, you know, from 7 yards out, although this is the type of situation where you could see McKaylee carry the ball. But if they're able to hold him to a field goal attempt here, that's a big stop for that White Warhawk defense.
Yeah, they forced Mount Union to take another timeout. So 3:12 to go here in the first half, 21-10. I'd like to remind you, at the half, of course, we'll Gordon Mann and Frank Rossi and Ryan Tips will take over. We'll get you first half. I guess, no, Ryan's looking at me. That's right. I don't have enough mics for Ryan. Sorry about that. Gordon Mann and Frank Rossi will get you coverage of the first half. We'll get a look at the halftime stats, talk about what's to come, and all those things here. At the half, at Stag Bowl 36, Keith, you mentioned this is a passing situation. Passing situations are what have been working and working very, very well for Mount Union this
year. Yeah, and you know, again, that's attacking the spot of the Warhawks defense that is least strong. I'll be diplomatic about that. And, you know, to be honest, this is a huge point in the game. You know, you talked about talking about the stats at halftime, but stats aren't going to tell the story the way a play like this right here is going to tell the story. In Whitewater, put in a situation where they made a third down stop, has to go back on the field, and it's still fighting and grinding. It forced Mount Union into third down two other times on this drive. Prior to this one, Mount Union converted both of those. So now this is Mount Union's fourth chance on this drive on third down, and if Whitewater can hold them to a field goal attempt here, that's a big turning point for them in this game. You know, again, just trying to stay in it. It's a big difference between 28-10, 24-10, and the score right now, of course, 21-10, 3:12 to go before the half.
So Mount Union comes on back out after the timeout. Second timeout on this drive on third down here for the Purple Raiders. They got McKaylee in the shotgun along with Kamik to the side, two receivers out each direction. Petrozello and Reynolds to the far side, and Claycomb and Shorts to the near side. Back to pass, looking near side, throwing near side, short of the end zone, and it's going to be brought down. It'll be fourth down, and Jeremy Diebert coming up and making the stop on A.J. Claycomb, as apparently McKaylee couldn't find any hint of Cecil Shorts in the end zone.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the first thing I saw when just the way Mount Union lined that up, Cecil Shorts inside the numbers means he has plenty of room to run an outside route. Troni Shumpert was on him, had the coverage well, you know, and McKaylee dropped back, looked at Shorts. Shorts wasn't there, and they ran something in behind it and tried to give their receiver a chance to run into the end zone, and Diebert came up and made the tackle.
Field goal attempt on the way, and the kick is up, and it is good. So a 20-yard field goal, and it is 24-10. Mount Union with the lead on Wisconsin Whitewater.
Yeah, and Mount Union got points there, but I think that's a win for Whitewater, because the way that drive was extended, and then the third downs that were converted during that drive, you know, those are the kind of things that are just a dagger to you defensively, to have that you know, to put your effort forth and get off the field, and then to have the drive extended. So Whitewater, big situation here, and they're going to have 2:33 now with that offense. We saw them do it last week with Jeff Donovan, drive down the field and score before the half. If they can do that again, they can go into the half feeling good about themselves.
We'll be back for the final 2:33 of the first half in just a moment. This is NCAA.com.
Did you know Division III basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them every week?
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, they do.
In the mud of a champion.
You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. It's presented thanks to Goucher College Radio and d3hoops.com.
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And Mount Union held to a field goal after a 7-minute, 17-second drive. Kept alive early on by a roughing the punter penalty, which I'm not sure too many people who saw the game on television would agree with. But now Whitewater has 2:33 to go and three timeouts and a chance to cut this lead beyond the 14 points it is right now, as 24-10. And a kickoff, and it is taken to the 40-yard line and wrapped up there after a nice long return. Derek Underwood on the return, a gain of about 28 yards.
You know, and Underwood, somebody who was in the running back mix, and to maybe possibly replace Justin Bieber before Antoine Anderson and Lavelle Coppedge emerged. Whitewater pretty solid on special teams, you know, especially if you take the view that that penalty wasn't a deserved penalty. Certainly, you know, the kick returns have been helpful. The one, of course, was across midfield. This one will get them to the 42-yard line, 2:27 to go before the half. Now you don't have to press as much because you have such good field position, but I think Whitewater is going to run their whole offense here.
They've got Antoine Anderson in the backfield and Donovan in the shotgun, and Anderson gets the call on 1st and 10, tries to bounce it to the outside, got some room on the left to the 45, up to the 49, a big gain on 1st down. It'll be 2nd down at about 7.
And that's the difference between having the ball at the 20 and feeling like you have to go 80 yards and rush and hurry, and then being almost near midfield and having the time to run the ball. You know, Whitewater has all three of its timeouts. Again, we're still more than 2 minutes here, so they could run with Anderson. And if Mount Union's feeling defensively like they're going to face the pass, there's going to be running lanes to get yards in chunks of 6 and 8.
Here's another handoff to Anderson, trying to go up the middle, and gets squirts through across the 50 down to the 47. They spot him. Kershaw was the one who initially tripped him up and brought him down.
And that could have gone for another couple yards if Kershaw didn't wrap Anderson up around the legs. And Whitewater look, you know, content, I think, at this point to run the ball. Mount Union's going to use all five of their defensive backs to back off. And Whitewater will take the runs. They'll take the yards. And then when Mount Union tightens it up and then this field compresses a little bit, then they'll bring out the passing plays.
Two receivers to the far, one to the near. looking. Donovan being chased out of the pocket, going to step up and run. Tries to get away from the defensive back, and Ely finally runs him out of bounds, and he goes over the Mount Union bench. And pops up.
That looked a little worse than it was, but Donovan, he's a trooper. He jumped right back over the bench and runs right back out into the huddle. Certainly, Joseph Millings and James Herbert not happy about that play because they got a little bit of pressure, were able to collapse the pocket a little bit. Donovan stepped up, you know, and it was able to, you know, break free and make a little something out of it, at least turn what could have been a loss into a short gain.
You know, the dive by Donovan reminds me of a first baseman going into the stands for a foul ball, and I think that's something Donovan has a little bit of experience at as well.
Absolutely. You got a baseball star for Whitewater and does play first base.
Minute 32 to go, and the play clock ticking down, and Whitewater's going to take timeout here. Play clock was at 2, so it will be Whitewater taking the timeout. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute. It is 24-10, Mount Union with the lead on Wisconsin-Whitewater, and you're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
Who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today.
NCAA basketball.
Who's your team?
Did you know Division III basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them every week?
Welcome to the big show.
Well, they do.
It's a blood of a champion.
You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville.
And back out at Salem Stadium. Here's the handoff to Coppage going to the left side on second down and 8. And he's run out of bounds, which stops the clock again with a minute 27 to go. It'll be third down and short.
And now third short, of course, for Whitewater managing the clock here with two timeouts, 1:27. They have their whole arsenal. I mean, they could still run it here. You know, obviously, you look for a short, as a defender, you look for short pass plays in this situation, probably first, and then some sort of run. And you see Whitewater coming out in the gun with three receivers and a tight end. You think, yeah, short pass play.
Third down and 3, ball at the 40-yard line. Slepsky, the tight end, goes to the other side. Two receivers to the right, one to the near. Donovan out of the shotgun. Short drop, looking to the flat. Pass complete to Brandis. Brandis beyond the first down marker. Fights his way out of bounds to stop the clock with a minute 21 to go. And Ryan Renbarger, the cornerback, fighting hard, trying to keep him in bounds to keep the clock rolling, but was unable to do so.
And Ryan Renbarger playing today with a shoulder injury. There was some doubt over whether or not he was going to play. He said he wanted to go. And, you know, when your shoulder's hurt, it can be the first hit, the first lick you deliver with that shoulder, you know, could you know, pretty much put you out for the game. So for Renbarger to still be playing here right before the half is certainly a tribute to his toughness.
First down and 10, ball at the 36-yard line. Trying to get into Shevler's field goal range at the very least. They got a minute 5 and 2 timeouts to go. Stepping up, Donovan. Looking to run, got his lineman in front of him, now looking to cut to the near side, got some room to the 45, to the 30, and run out of bounds at the 26 by Ely. Close to the first down, stops the clock with 54 seconds to go.
You know, things that make great plays, Jeff Donovan's escapability helps. Offensive linemen staying on their blocks help. But then, when Donovan breaks contain, Nick Slupski gets on his block. Aaron Rush is blocking downfield. You know, that's the difference between a championship team and an okay team, you know, in all honesty. Every guy, these guys aren't standing around watching. As soon as they see that play break down and Donovan break contain, you know, everybody was on their jobs, on their blocks, and making that a little gain into a pretty decent game for the Warhawks.
Yeah, the question is it going to be 9 or 10? And they're bringing the chains all the way across the field from the far side to make sure.
And even Donovan trying to deliver a little punch hit at the end on Darrell Ely. So
yeah, you saw the sticks. There's of course a stick on this side he was aiming for as well. But it is a first down, 10-yard gain for Jeff Donovan, and 54 seconds to go. Two timeouts, plenty of time now for Whitewater and a lot to work with.
Well, Pat, you mentioned getting in Jeff Shevler's field goal range, and 24-13 going into the half. That's not an insurmountable lead. But if they could get this thing to 24-17,
yeah.
As poorly as they played defensively on the first two drives, just giving up Cecil Short's post route right down the middle, to be in this game 7 points at the half. If Donovan can bring them back to do it, it would be certainly impressive.
Brandis and Roosh to the far side. Corey Robinson to the near side on first and ten. Donovan, short drop out of the shotgun. Looking, nobody open. Being chased out of pocket, dumps it off for Antoine Anderson back at the line of scrimmage. Probably would have been better off throwing it incomplete as the clock rolls and they have to take a timeout with 45
seconds.
Yeah,
you know, you almost would throw that one away. And Donovan, you know, he actually is pretty well known for going through his first progression, second progression, and then throwing away and sort of living to play another day. He's a very smart game manager, and he's managed this drive really well for Whitewater. But that time, yeah, he probably would have been better off at getting rid of it and saving the timeout.
So 45 seconds to go here in the half, 24-10, Mount Union with the lead on Wisconsin Whitewater in Stag Bowl 36. I think we've gone, gosh, Keith, almost an hour and 20 minutes since we mentioned that this is the fourth consecutive meeting between Mount Union and Whitewater here in the Stag Bowl.
Well, you know, if you're paying attention at this point, hopefully you know that. But, you know, if it's your first time joining us, welcome. And yes, this is getting to be a familiar sight down here in Salem. Of course, the Stag Bowl itself has been in Salem since 1993, and that was the first year Mount Union won a title down here. And now the Warhawks and the Warhawks fans, in all honesty, know their way around here. You know, school chartered a couple buses to come down from Wisconsin, and it's a familiar sight for these guys, and for them to lose the talent they've lost over the past couple years and to be back is just a tribute to what a consistent program that's become.
Second down and 10. Slupski comes over to the near side, two receivers to the near and one to the far from the 25-yard line. Donovan out of the shotgun, dumps it off and incomplete, in and out of the hands of Lavelle Coppage. He didn't have a lot of room to go. He probably could have picked up five out of it, but not if he doesn't catch it.
Yeah. And, you know, we're discussing, as we discuss the kicking range here of Jeff Shebler, you know, to be on the 25-yard line for Whitewater, a play call like that to Coppage in the middle of the field is almost one of those plays that's designed to pick up a couple yards in case they have to kick a field goal. And then you take your one shot on third down, of course. If you don't make the catch on second down, now that this third down play is much more crucial.
It would be 42 yards from here. Shevler's 5 of 7 from 40 to 49. Long on the season is 47, but he's good from longer than that in the past. Back to pass is Donovan. Looking, shaking out of the pocket, has to get it away, and he does. Gets it beyond the line of scrimmage, and it is gets the ball away. So it will
it's very close to grounding, and you probably could make a case for it. The line judge and the referee are going to discuss it, because Donovan made an effort to get outside of the pocket, and so they're trying to decipher, determine whether he was in the tackle box or not, and Mount Union defensive end.
Play fourth down.
Yeah, because he made the effort to get outside the tackle box, and it's not the hash mark, it's not necessarily the pocket as it were, but it, once he was able to, he jumped over a defensive lineman and threw the ball away. It was his right to do so, so to speak.
Shebler 21 of 26 on field goals now this season, and this will be a 42-yarder.
Yeah, this is a kicker who's been an All-American. This is a makeable kick for him.
Working out of the hold of Chris Rauschult, the punter. 36 seconds left here in the first half. There's a snap, handled cleanly, kick on the way, has the distance, and it is no good wide to the left. So Shebler unable to convert on a 42-yarder, and you know Mount Union, they will not necessarily be content to go to the locker room up 14 because they have some time left and a timeout to work with, but they will have at least 14-point lead.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised though if they killed the 32 seconds here and took it in 24-10. They're certainly fortunate to have that 14-point lead after the drive that the Warhawks put together. And now if you're the Warhawks, if you're Lance Leipold, if you're Brian Borland, and you're going to talk to your units, here at halftime, you got to take some positives in. You know, you didn't get the points there, but you were able to move the ball down the field. You were able to get defensive stop on Mount Union last time they had the ball.
So first and 10 at the 25-yard line. Not kneeling it down. Here's a handoff to Kamik, and Kamik spins off a tackler, still on his feet at the 30, and is finally wrapped up by Paul Christofferson, comes up and makes the stop from his free safety position, clock rolling with under 20 seconds to go. Mount Union won't have to snap it again if the Purple Raiders don't want to.
But, you know, that's one thing that we didn't mention, that those plays that Nate Kamik does, he can break those in long plays.
And they are going to let the clock tick down here. And we're going to send it downstairs for Frank Rossi in just a second here as he waits to catch up with Larry Karras on the way to the locker room as his Purple Raiders lead Wisconsin-Whitewater by the score of 24-10. And here is Frank Rossi. Go ahead.
Coach Karras, you're up by 14, but you don't look very happy. What's your assessment so far?
I don't think we played very well in the second quarter offensively because we had to punt three times, didn't consistently move the ball. So we want to get back to being a little more aggressive on offense.
Any adjustments that you can think of?
Well, I wish we could kick deeper and cover better, but I don't know that I can fix that right now.
Good luck in the second half, and thank you, Coach.
All right, thanks a lot, Frank Rossi. And, I guess it's probably one thing that can't be fixed right now. Kick deeper and cover better probably had to be covered in February when the recruiting class comes in. But, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, Mount Union had a lot to be happy about in the first quarter, Keith, and very little to be happy about in the second quarter, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Whitewater settled down. Part of that is definitely Whitewater's doing. You know, they backed it off a little bit defensively so that the deep middle passes weren't going to be as open. And they didn't trust their defenders a little bit to come up and make the tackles. Part of it, too, is Whitewater was able to establish a little bit of a rhythm offensively so that they could stay on the field a little bit. And you see the way Jeff Donovan manages the game, uses all parts of the field. He can make those throws down the field. He can make the throws in the flat. Whitewater certainly can run the ball. So all those things sort of working together show you, why Whitewater is the other team in this game. They're certainly very talented. And I think that interview, besides, having Karras be candid with us, which we certainly appreciate, and it helps that we've gotten to know him over the years, but tells you what kind of guy he is. You know, to be up 24-10 and a half and to still be not really all that pleased. He's in some ways a perfectionist, and he's looking to find things that this team, he knows his team can be beat here in the second half. He looked at that second quarter and said, there were some things that if Whitewater continues to do those, we can get beat, and we don't want that feeling again. We're going to go in the half and get those corrected.
And they'll have 20 minutes to do it here. The score at the half. It is Mount Union 24 and Wisconsin Whitewater 10. We'll take a break, and a bit of an extended break, and we come back out in a couple of minutes. We'll get you the halftime. Gordon Mann and Frank Rossi will get you up to date on everything else happening in Division III, which is all right here. But I know Frank will have stories from the sideline that we didn't get a chance to get to in the first half, and we'll get you, he'll tell you about everything else going on here at Stag Bowl 36. Again, at the half, it is Mount Union 24 and Wisconsin Whitewater 10. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the Internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
Ever wonder where you can hear the latest Division III basketball news?
Welcome to the Big Show.
That's Hoopsville, the only show dedicated to Division III basketball in the world. You can tune in to where coaches, players, fans, and even us commentators chat about the week that was and the week that will be. So tune in to Hoopsville Sunday nights from 6 until 9 Eastern, live on your computer. Or check out the podcast. Because if you want to talk Division III basketball, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Hoopsville is presented by D3Hoops.com and broadcast thanks to Goucher College Radio. For more information, go to www.d3hoops.com/Hoopsville.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today. NCAA basketball. Who's your team?
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
Welcome back. We are here at the half. Stag Bowl 36.
Gordon Mann here in Salem, Virginia, as the Purple Raiders have a 24-10 lead on the University of Wisconsin Whitewater Warhawks. The Purple Raiders, who have been a second-half team, in as much as they're, I mean, they're an undefeated team, they're an outstanding team, but second half has been where they've made a lot of hay. 28 points, 28-0 against Randolph-Macon, 28 straight points against Hobart, 21 points against Cortland, but they shut Cortland out in the third quarter. And again, another strong performance in the second quarter against Wheaton. So I think all told, opponents have 14 points. They're being outscored somewhere in the range of 100-14 in the second half. Different team you're playing here, Frank, but would you expect that in the second half, that Mount Union would pull away, or not with this one?
Let me tell you this much. I'm not going to break this news to Coach Leipold when he comes out of the locker room, because I don't think it's a good start to bring that fact up. You know what? It's interesting, the progression of this game so far. As far as the whole Nathan Mick factor, he's been well contained, and then McHaley's passing has gotten a little less efficient. We noted the fact that he had the injury, I thought it was his not throwing arm at first, it was his throwing arm, as Pat expertly brought up. And the tape on the elbow is covering a pretty bad turf burn that he had. It's just below the elbow area. I believe, having looked at him more closely when he was going back in the locker room, they may have retaped or reduced the tape so that his elbow had more mobility. It seemed like the tape was a little higher, and he was pointing to it when he made a batting completion on a second down pass just before the personal foul that gave them the first down of the kick before halftime.
Here are your first half statistics, courtesy of the folks here from the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. First downs, very even. In fact, now Wisconsin Whitewater is an 11-10 edge. Rushing yards, Wisconsin Whitewater 18-84. The Purple Raiders 17-79. Here is where it is not even. Whitewater has 88 passing yards. Mount Union 229. Total yards, 30 plays, 308 yards for Mount Union, 33 plays, 172 yards for the Warhawks. Here's another area where it's not even, and this one's in favor of the Warhawks, as Whitewater, four kick returns for 125 yards. Mount Union, three kick returns for 54 yards. That gets to what Coach Harris was alluding to there at the end. Mount Union has scored and scored quickly. Whitewater's taking a little longer, but the time of possession advantage is actually in favor of the Purple Raiders, 15 and a half minutes to 14 and change. And now, ladies and gentlemen, third down conversion, 3 of 6 for the Purple Raiders, 2 of 6 for the Warhawks. Both teams have scored in both their trips to the red zone. Individual standouts, as Frank mentioned a few moments ago, they can make 37 and 2.8 yards. It's almost 4 yards below his average for carry. Greg McHaley, 4 for 45 for 10.5 yards. McHaley, 9 completions on 13 attempts. Most of this came in the first quarter, 229 yards. And the two touchdowns, both the season shorts. Shorts, 134 yards in the first quarter alone, 167 at the half. 6 catches. He's the only Purple Raider with more than one reception. And for the Warhawks, Antoine Anderson, 5 carries for 27 yards and a touchdown. Lavelle Coppedge, 7 carries for 19 yards. Donovan's numbers, 10 for 15, 88 yards, no touchdowns, and no interceptions. Aaron Roush, 3 catches for 34 yards for the Warhawks. Defensive standouts, Chaz Jordan, 7 tackles, 4 unassisted, and Max Ford for the Warhawks, 5 tackles, 2 unassisted. Frank, looking at the Warhawks, Anderson, 5 carries for 27 yards. Coppedge, 7 carries for 19 yards. Donovan has a couple, and Roush has the 19 yards on the reverse. We said in the pregame that the Warhawks have to be able to run the ball effectively to win this game. I guess the question is that effectively or effectively enough?
It wasn't in the first quarter. In the second quarter, I think it's definitely at least improved their chances in this game a little bit. It's not that they are doing tremendous jobs in the middle of the offensive line to break open those runs, but I'll tell you, Coppedge, I watched him basically directly looking into the line area at one play down there, and he is very shifty. He will wait for that opening to come open for, you know, a 10-yard run, a 15-yard run. So it's far from over here, especially in the running game. If that's what you think it'll take for them to win this game, then, folks, this could be an interesting second half. I got to say one thing about Donovan in his passing today. I brought up in the first quarter how the fans behind the bench were kind of getting on him. There's this expectation now of success, I think, with Whitewater fans. Something you didn't see last year. Last year it was, well, we're playing them out. Okay, anything can happen, I guess. But they were all behind their team. Today, after a bad drive, they were getting under his skin a little bit. You could see in his face. He's a guy that's always smiling. Right. He wasn't smiling. Then finally somebody says something very nice towards him, supportive, and he shook that and started, getting back into his rhythm a little bit. It's kind of a flip-flop a little bit of what I saw on the field last year.
Right.
And actually, they flipped the sidelines, so maybe they left the fans on either side, too. But nonetheless, I think Whitewater's very much in this game, but they took a little while to find their rhythm, a little bit of a rhythm at least, and they paid the price on the scoreboard. They can come back, though, we know that.
Donovan, one thing you will say about his passes is he's thrown into very tight coverage.
Yes.
And he's been very accurate. McKaylee's struggling with his accuracy, but also perhaps bothered a little bit by the tape job on his elbow there in the first half. Special teams, Coach Karras alluded to it, and he headed into the locker room that he wishes they could kick deeper and he wishes they could cover better. But two special teams plays that loom large, well, three in that half. One works to Whitewater's advantage, two do not. The one that does is the kick return that sparks the first drive. The two that do not is Antoine Anderson getting called for what looked like a really tough penalty. He was blocked underneath the punter when the punter came down and landed on it. And then the missed field goal by Shepard, 41 yards, is not a gimme. But, in terms of momentum, you can see Mount Union get a lift out of the missed field goal.
Yeah, it's a momentum question right now as to who walked into the locker room with more momentum. I'd say Mount Union, but not by a landslide by any means. And as I said to Coach Karras, you're up by 14, but you don't look very happy right now. And, yes, he has that expectation that they should be up 45-0, I'm sure, in every game they play because he believes that much in his student-athletes. But at the same time, Whitewater didn't just blow away at, 14-0 or 21-7 in this game. They're still very much around. So I would say momentum's almost on an even keel right now, and look for the first real big play of the second half to dictate where that half goes. It sounds cliche to a certain degree, but it really is like that, I think, in this game. Even down 14, if Whitewater can come out and do something big defensively, offensively and defensively, then you know what? In a blink of an eye, this game could be a tie game.
Well, big first half for Greg McKaylee, and add another trophy to the case for him as D3Football.com revealed its All-American team today in the pregame coverage. First team offense has three Purple Raiders, Greg McKaylee at quarterback, Nate Kamik at running back, and Luke Summers is the tackle. Rest of the first team All-Americans, Tunde Ogun of Christopher Newport University, Jack Phelan of Hartwick, Royce Winford, the senior from Augsburg, John Lanoweta, repeat award winner. He's the first team All-American at tight end. Rest of the offensive line, Josh Littlejohn from Mary Harden Baylor, Ryan Hunter from Harden Simmons, so the two rivals next to each other, at least on paper, literally, as we feed the All-Americans off. Mike Sherman from Whitewater's did a very good job on Herbert today, and Jesse Scott, the outstanding lineman from Wisconsin Whitewater. Sherman has really done a good job. Millings has been able to get free for some tackles, but Herbert, frankly, has been a non-factor.
To a certain degree, you look at the stats, you look at everything that's going on the field, and it's a pretty good assessment, I think, right now for it. You look at a guard in Sherman for Whitewater. To a certain degree, too, though, give credit to Donovan for what's been happening on that line. He's been directing things pretty well down there on those scrambles that he's had to run.
Right.
He was literally pushing his guards and tackles, into position and running around them just before halftime. Granted, the drive led to 0 points on the missed field goal. But Donovan, it seems to trust his line to a degree, but also has maturity to know they're not perfect.
Yes,
that I need to get around.
To go.
Yep. And I see you guys.
Right.
Later for now. But, that line, also Mount Union's line, I know for a fact that number 70, Caleb Crowell, I think left tackle for Mount Union, had a huge block that enabled Greg McKaylee to throw the second touchdown pass to Cecil Shorts in the first quarter, and he's getting a lot of kudos from his teammates for that fact down on the field. So both lines playing well. You might want to say, Mount Union must not be if Mick's not getting the yards, but Mick can't run outside either. He got caught twice trying to go to the outside for little or no gain.
Greg Rossi, Gordon Mann, is here in the background. The the Spirit of Salem, the Sounds of Salem, something of Salem. The band plays every year at the half. The Band of Salem. And,
hold up, right?
In a little role reversal, Keith McMillan pointing out that the Purple Raiders have no sacks, and the Wisconsin Whitewater has one. The one was Sam Markham's sack, and in fact, if you believe averages, that's all Whitewater will get, because Mount Union only gives up about 1.25 sacks per year. As the...
Well, I'm going to be going down serious in a second on recording because we want to talk to Coach Leipold. Equal time, as we say.
All right.
And, you know... actually, one question for you. What do you think I should ask? Let's poll the audience here. What's a good question for the coach?
I would ask him if he is comfortable with where his running game is right now, if he's comfortable with what Coppedge and Anderson could give him, or if he thinks he has to open it up more in the second half. That would be my question.
Okay. You know what? We might use that lifeline.
You don't even have to trademark it. Well, we'll let Frank get downstairs so that he can catch Coach Leipold, and we will... as I hopefully figure out the right one. I hope that's your mic. Because rest of the first team All-Americans is on the defensive side from Salisbury University, Jarrell Chandler, James Herbert, Mountain Union defensive end. This is first team, D3Football.com All-Americans. Brad Vicroy, the senior and defensive standout for the Wisconsin Stevens Point Pointers. Gerard Bryant from St. Lawrence University. Three linebackers, Eric Henry, Matt Scalise, and Jace Rindle of Wisconsin Whitewater. Pete Intersagan is your one All-American corner. Jason Shear from Ithaca College. The other Intersagan is from Wheaton College. The safeties, Drew Ziller, the Z-Man, as he's apparently referred to, from Carleton, and Derek Williams from Mary Harden Baylor. Specialists, first team, Scott Burkhofer, the senior kicker for the Linfield Wildcats. Alex Groh, the junior punter for the Occidental Tigers. And Larry Beavers, the senior kick returner, who had eight returns for touchdowns on the year for the Wolverines. As is usually the case, the championship teams here are well represented on the All-American squad. Other All-Americans from these two teams: Jeff Shebler is a second-team All-American, the kicker for the Warhawks. Other All-Americans: Lavelle Coppedge, the freshman, one of just two freshmen on the All-American teams. He is a third-team All-American. Mount Union Cecil Shorts, the wide receiver, he's third-team All-American. Third-team defense, Daryl Ely, the senior quarterback. Honorable mention defense, Anthony White of Wisconsin Whitewater, and Matt Williamson of Mount Union. Troney Shumper of Whitewater, also a honorable mention defensive standout. So in terms of All-Americans, that will be posted online a little later on for the Purple, for all the teams, and D3Football.com will post that, and you can take a look at that. We are 2 minutes and 40 seconds away from the start of the second half as we get ready here. It's the Purple Raiders on top of the Warhawks, 24-10. We will take a break, and when we come back, Frank Rossi will hopefully have Coach Leipold, and as Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan step back into the booth.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today. NCAA basketball. Who's your...
And back out here at Salem Stadium at the half, Frank Rossi is going to try to catch up with Lance Leipold. And go ahead, Frank.
Guys, Coach Leipold's with me.
Go.
Coach, team's down by 14, but it seems like the team's very much in the game. What's your assessment of the first half?
Well, we just gave up those big plays early, and they jumped on us. You know, I think we've answered back. You know, not getting a touchdown inside the five, you know, hurt a little bit. But we're battling, and we get the ball to start this half, and I know our guys got their best 30 minutes of football left.
You satisfied with your running game? If not, what are you going to do to try to open up some more?
Well, we just have to get a few more snaps to be a little more consistent. We're pleased with it. We're gonna make a few minor adjustments here at half, but we got to get those two guys going.
Thanks very much. Good luck, Coach.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot. Frank Rossi on the sidelines talking with head coach Lance Leipold. His team, you know, obviously Keith is the one that has, maybe, I I guess they have the most adjustments to make. They did make some good adjustments between the first and second quarter, obviously, but need to put something together here and get some points on the board now.
Well, I pretty much agree with the coach's assessment of the half, too, because, you know, you take away those two short TDs, the 55-yarder, excuse me, and the 41-yarder in the first 6 minutes of this game, and it's pretty much been an even game. You know, a lot of the stats, you know, time of possession's even, third down conversions, neither team has a turnover. You know, neither team has gotten much pressure on the other team's quarterback. A lot of things in this game even. You know, both teams struggling a little bit to establish the run, but I think Whitewater has established its offense, and like Coach Leipold said, they've established. You know, they've answered the bell a little bit. They're coming, they're in this game. But not getting a touchdown down there, you know, and then not getting a field goal at the end of the half, that is pretty tough for them because they need points at this point. So, going in with you know, they start off with the ball here in the second half, and they certainly need to do something to establish that momentum. And you obviously can't cry about the points that they didn't score, but they could be in an even better position in this game, whether that be 24-13 or 24-17 or even 24-20. Doesn't matter. It's 24-10, and they get the ball to start the half.
Give me your quick offensive assessment. What do you do if you're Mountain Union to try to run the ball a little better here in the second half?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you've used the pass to back Whitewater up off the line, and now you should be able to. I mean, we haven't seen any kind of toss, sweep, anything from Mountain Union. It's just been up the gun, up the middle type runs, and there's a lot left in the arsenal for Mountain Union.
And we're waiting on the second half kickoff. Of course, Whitewater will receive after deferring the opening kickoff. So the Warhawks, after missing a scoring opportunity on the final seconds of the first half, and Jeff Shedmore missed a 42-yard field goal, we'll get the first crack here in the second half.
I mean, and going back to that question, Pat, you know, to answer it, we haven't seen much of the outside zone play from Mountain Union. They run stretch plays just like Whitewater does. Getting those outside runs, we just, you know, haven't been a whole lot of commit in the first half. And that's a nice thing that the ace in the hole to have for Mountain Union.
And the kick is away. Samploski takes it at his own 10-yard line through to the 20, 25, and up across the 30, upended at the 33-yard line by Eric Gerhardt, making the stop. Refreshing the Whitewater offense across the front line, it's Mike Sherman, Matt Weber, Garth Coates, Robbie Ustrak, and Rob Gilbert, the offensive lineman. Jeff Donovan, the quarterback, Nick Slupski, the tight end, Jordan Wells, Aaron Roosh, and Adam Brandis started the game this afternoon. It looks like those three are coming back out at wide receivers. Antoine Anderson has gotten the majority of the carries in the backfield, and he comes out as well. It is Gifford along with Roosh out to the far side and Brandis to the near side. Brandis going in motion. Here's a quick pass in the flat to Roosh across the 35, the 40, knocked out of bounds close to the first down. And it was Ryan Renbarger, the cornerback, making the stop. It'll be, we'll wait on the spot, but it looks like it's going to be second down and fairly short, or first down.
And for the Warhawks, you know, the first half, four kick returns for 125 yards and another great kick return right there, and then the quick pass to Roosh, and they are already nearly at midfield on the 44-yard line. And, you know, for Whitewater's offensive numbers to not look like they're having a great half, part of it is because they've done so much with those returns in the special teams.
Two receivers to the far side. Here's the handoff to Anderson. Anderson got some room on the right, gets away from a tackler across midfield, and is brought down by, looks like, James Herbert, the defensive end, making the tackle deep downfield. Converts the very short second down, and here's a penalty marker coming out way at the end.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see what happened late there at the end, but if it's against Mount Union, that's what's going to build this Whitewater drive.
After the first down, dead ball. Personal foul, number six of the defense. 15 yards, first down.
The reason I knew it was against Mountain Union is because you saw other Mountain Union players walking up to Darrell Ely and talking to him and trying to, you know, tell him to calm down and keep his head. And he, you know, tap himself on the chest right there and say, hey, that's my bad. And it is his bad because now you got Whitewater, this half. We're 44 seconds into the half. Whitewater is on the 33-yard line again, and we talked about them coming out of the half and trying to do something to build the momentum to get themselves back into the game, and they're right back in it.
Mountain Union has outscored its opponents 91-21 in the second half here in the playoffs. At Whitewater driving here on its first possession of the third quarter here in Stag Bowl 36 from Salem, Virginia. Long snap count. Here's the handoff to Anderson. Room on the right side. Still some room. He brought down, shakes out of the tackle of, Roger Stewart. Carried all the way down across the 22 to the 21 for a first down.
Remember how Anderson looked on the first drive when Whitewater scored and he got those carries and he was hitting the hole hard, but he's the type of runner when he gets in between those tackles, you know, he delivers the blow. He's looking like that again. He looks fresh. The first tackler is not knocking him down. And if they can get him going and then mix in Lavelle Cobbage, Whitewater's offense will be humming.
And meanwhile, big gain on that play because James Herbert jumped off sides and then was out of position after he got back on the defensive side of the ball. First down and 10 from the 21.5. Fakes the pass, and Donovan on the keeper goes nowhere. Wrapped up by Clance Liggett and James Herbert in the backfield for a short loss. It'll be second down at about 11.
Yeah, that was definitely a broken play. Donovan took out not even a three-step drop. He just stepped out, opened up his feet, and looked like he was going to throw a quick screen maybe to Roosh. And Roosh had run a route straight off the line, and so he wasn't there. And Donovan just tucked it and made sure he got a yard out of it rather than a loss.
We got second down and 11.
And Roosh is who Ely got tangled up with when the penalty was called. It didn't look like he was pushing too much after the it wasn't a hard push, but it was after the play.
Two receivers on the near side. One of them is Roosh. Donovan looking in the end zone, looking for Gifford, and overthrows him incomplete. And Gifford Gifford was open. He had a step on the defender. Joseph Millings was chasing Donovan and making him get rid of the football, but Gifford had some room to work with, and Donovan couldn't hit him.
Yeah, and they, you know, it looked like they thought that there may have been somebody a tag grabbed on a jersey a little bit there, but this is maybe my defensive back bias coming out. I think receivers complain about that all the time. They always think somebody held them up or something like that.
Not quite in the red zone, but Whitewater struggling in this part of the field on their last couple of possessions. Here's now a third down and 11 from the 22. Short drop out of the shotgun. Here's a pass to the sidelines. Nice diving, picking it up by Adam Brandis, but unable to stay in bounds, so it's going to be fourth down and presume a field goal here.
That's the third time that that Whitewater has thrown a pass on that same sideline there that's been caught, but it's been out of bounds. The good thing is they get Jeff Shebler back out on the field, and he missed a kick right before the half. And this is the hold is going to be on the 30, so it'll be a 40-yard kick for him. This is well within Shebler's range. And he needs to make this. They need to get him back in this thing. You know, they restore the confidence in him, of course, if he's able to make it.
This will be a 40-yard field goal attempt. And Shebler working out of the hold of Chris Rusholt. Good snap, handled cleanly, kick on the way, has the distance, and it is again no good, wide to the left.
Miss it the same way.
Same spot.
Yeah, it looks like he's either, he doesn't have a hook on the ball. It's not the wind catching it or anything like that. He's just kind of maybe following through a little too much, and it veers off wide to the left. Both kicks now, that's 6 points that the Warhawks have left on the board. Plenty of distance, as you mentioned, and now the Warhawks, really, if you add the other 4 points to when they were inside the 5-yard line, they settled for a field goal instead of a touchdown. That's 10 points they've left on the board.
And we will take a timeout with 12:40 to go here in the third quarter. It is Mount Union 24, Whitewater 10. This is the NCAA.com coverage of Stag Bowl 36.
Who are you?
What are your team colors?
Who can make you cheer?
Who can bring your family and friends together?
And play your fight song?
Who can bring you to your feet?
Or bring you to your knees?
When the game is on the line, who do you want to take the last shot?
And who do you want to slap high fives, jump up and down, and yell at the top of your lungs with?
There's probably a game near you today.
NCAA basketball.
Who's your team?
Did you know Division III basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them every week?
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, they do. You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Hoopsville is presented thanks to Goucher College Radio and d3hoops.com.
Back to the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
I am
And back out here in Salem, Virginia. Beautiful afternoon. The rain has stayed away. The warmth has stayed here. And we've had a football game so far, 24-10. Mount Union with the lead on Wisconsin Whitewater. And Whitewater comes up empty on its first drive of the second half with a missed field goal, and Mount Union has a chance to capitalize.
But Whitewater did, of course, have a nice kick return and was able to drive and get a field goal attempt, which they missed. So, you know, they feel like they can move the ball here on Mount Union.
McKaylee back to pass, and pass complete downfield to the receiver Judd Harold, the backup tight end out of Chagrin Falls, Ohio. Big gain up to the 40, and it'll be first down.
And for Mount Union, you know, this drive is just as crucial as the first drive coming out for Whitewater was, because Mount Union now has survived two drives deep in Whitewater territory, haven't given up any points by virtue of two missed field goals. And now if they could put some more points on this board, they could put that doubt back in Whitewater's mind. They could create a little more distance on the scoreboard between the two teams.
Up under center, McKaylee with a double tight end set in front of him. In fact, really more like a quadruple set. Back to pass, complete to the tight end Reynolds at about the 45-yard line. It'll be second and five.
You know, if you've watched this game from the very beginning, or if you've been listening with us from the very beginning, and it's, you know, the first 6 minutes, the two big touchdown passes to Cecil Shorts got Mount Union on the board early. It's pretty much been an even game since. You might even say Whitewater's controlled the game since then. They just haven't been able to back it up with points.
Yep, they've had some good coverage on Shorts. They've definitely kept Shorts out of the end zone. They forced Mount Union to settle for a field goal in the second quarter. It's not something Mount Union does very often. Only six field goals on the season. Here's the handoff to kick. Plenty of room on the left side. Turns the corner to the 45, to the 40, and knocked out of bounds by Zach Christofferson, the strongest safety, well downfield after a big gain on second down.
And if there was ever any doubt whether Nate Kamik loved contact, it almost seemed like he slowed up, turned his body. He knew Christofferson was coming at him, and you know he could have just pushed him out of bounds. He could have ran out of bounds. Instead, he turned his body back inside toward the play so he could have contact with Christofferson.
So ball spotted at the 33-yard line of Whitewater, first down and 10. Kamik in the backfield along with McKaylee. Petrozella to the near side, Shorts to the far side. Rolling, no, here's a handoff, and Kamik trying to get to the left side, tripped up and finally slowed down. Anthony White made the initial trip up, slowed him down enough for Jace Rindle to come up and finish him off short of the line of scrimmage.
And he kind of drilled him, it seemed like. But, yeah, Anthony White, you know, he's a guy who's pretty got a lot of talent and a tough guy to block. We haven't called his name very many times today. By that time he got off his block, was down to his knees, and just made a lunge at Kamik's legs. And by the time Kamik regained his balance, Rindo came in and finished him off.
Part of this real young defensive line, which starts two sophomores and two juniors.
Those guys are going to be trouble certainly next season.
Here's another handoff to Kamik to the left side, and Kamik gets a few yards out of it inside the 30. Down to the 29 before Rindle brings him down.
And now that's three carries in a row for Mount Union, starting to ride Nate Kamik, and they've done it. When times get rough, you know, Larry Karras puts the ball in the belly of Nate Kamik, and they just get behind that offensive line, and they run it, and they run it, and they grind other teams down. And, you know, at this point, Mount Union trying to hold a lead, but also trying to gain some more points, but they are trying to compress this game. And so, you know, you run the ball, you keep that clock moving.
Probably four down territory for here, well outside of Mount Union's field goal range, and Whitewater, not liking what it sees, takes a timeout. We'll take one as well. 9:53 to go here in the third quarter, and it's Mount Union 24, Wisconsin Whitewater 10. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
Like fans like to let you know that coming up a little bit later in the game on D3Football.com, we will give you guys the opportunity to cast one ballot for most outstanding player of Stag Bowl 36. We'll update the, we'll put a new poll on the front page. We'll throw out a handful of players for you to choose from, and whichever one you choose, we will file as the official Frank Rossi sideline guy ballot for Stag Bowl 36 most outstanding player. So come back and check back in the fourth quarter for that. I think there are some, there's some candidates, obviously, right now, but you know, they're certainly in a position where the game can change directions, although Mountain Union is driving, leading 24-10 here early in the third quarter, Keith.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, we talked about Nate Kamik in the first half, 13 carries for 41 yards, average of 2.8 yards per carry, and his long run in the first half was 7 yards, and you just don't keep Nate Kamik bottled up for too long. Mountain Union got ahead in this game by going deep over the middle to Cecil Shorts a couple of times. And now, you know, they have Nate Kamik sort of in their back pocket, and they're starting to break him out just a little bit now. 3 consecutive carries, and you know, they're in a third and medium situation, so you may not see him here. But as this game goes on, we're going to see a lot more of Nate Kamik, I believe.
3 carries for 27 yards on this drive for the collegiate football all-time leading rusher. Third down and a long 5 for the Purple Raiders. Ball spotted on the 28-yard line. McKaylee out of the shotgun. Fakes the handoff. Drops back to pass. Being chased by Ankley. Rolling to the near side. Gets away from him up to the 30, to the 25 between tacklers, and brought down by Max Ford from behind, but not until after he gets the first down.
And what a play for Greg McKaylee. He ran about 40 yards on that play as far as he reversed out, had to run, scramble, and he looked like he was getting chased, I believe, by Anthony White. And White was able to change direction and chase him as well. And then McKaylee was able to just get a couple yards out of it once he got past the line of scrimmage.
First down and 10 just inside the Warhawk 20. 9:29 and counting remaining in the third quarter. Mountain Union up 24-10 with the football. Claycomb wide out to the near side. One receiver to the far side is Petrozella, looking in that direction, tossing. Going to the outside is Nate Kamik. To the 15, just short of the 15, is where he's brought down after a gain of about 4.
And very disciplined defense on the part of the Warhawks. Mountain Union gives the option look on that play, and it wasn't there for McKaylee. He pitched it to Kamik, and Warhawks' pursuit to the pitch man was perfect on that play. One thing we haven't mentioned about Nate Kamik, of course, is in lieu of all these, or lost in all these numbers that he has, he came into this game with 27.02. He only needed 55 yards to have the best single season in NCAA rushing history. That number, 27.56 by Danny Woodhead of Chadron State, I believe in 06.
Yeah, he is over that now, 64 yards before the last couple of carries here. Dropping back to passes, McKaylee. Being chased out of the pocket, somehow spins away, gets inside the 15, makes Rindle miss, and is finally run out of bounds by Matt McCullough. Real close to the first down marker. It's going to be third down and about 1.
And that, again, you know, you just can't say enough about Greg McKaylee. I mean, he looked pretty much sacked at that point and turned it into a 6-yard run. Whitewater got the good pressure up the middle. It was
Hicks.
It was John Baldwin and Wes Hicks who got after him, and McKaylee just, made, you know, turns these plays that for most teams, that's a 10-yard loss. That's a sack. And for Greg McKaylee, it's, you know, 5-yard gain.
Here's third down and 1. McKaylee out of the shotgun. Long snap count. Here's the handoff to Kamik. Kamik goes over the right side for a couple yards, gets the first down. Brought down by Kyle Subanowski along with Justin Ankley, but not before he moves the chains.
That's tough as a player, too. If you're these Whitewater defensive linemen, you should get after the quarterback and you sort of compress the pocket and you wrap a guy up and you have these sacks. You know, when a guy has that escapability that McKaylee has, it's certainly tough to deal with.
And there is a Mount Union player down.
That's the guard, Sam Guerrero, the junior, 6 foot, 260 pounds from Dublin, Ohio. He just got, Kamik just rolled up on the back of his leg and right in that lower leg knee area. It happens a lot, of course, as running backs are tackled behind the line of scrimmage, and the worst part is the linemen, because they're facing the other way, engaged with their defender. They don't see it coming. The good news is Guerrero is up and walking off under his own power, and Larry Karras, of course, right next to him alongside, making sure he's all right.
John Nikolazakis comes in, 6'1", 300-pound sophomore out of Cambridge, Ohio.
And now that gives Mountain Union actually a bigger offensive line.
Yeah.
A 260-pound guy comes out, and a 300-pounder comes in.
A.J. Claycomb split out wide to the far side along with Cecil Shorts in the slot. It is first down and goal from the 8. Petrozella lined up against Shumpert on the near side, and Kamik in the backfield. McKaylee out of the shotgun, now steps up. steps back after making a call. Is going to give the handoff to Kamik, and Kamik goes through the pile inside the five, down to about the three. Big gain on first and goal to be second down.
And, of course, Mount Union in a situation where any points they add to their 14-point lead here, 24-10, 7-20 and counting in the third quarter. Any points they add here, you know, make this a three-possession game. And for the Warhawks, you know, the shorter this game gets, the more they kick themselves for those two field goals attempts missed on each side of halftime.
Reynolds, the tight end, in the slot to the right side, along with two other receivers. Claycomb out to the far side. Second down and goal from the four. McKaylee drops back to pass, looking right, looking for an open running lane, goes to the left side, and gets hit. Ball comes out. Whitewater says they have it, and we're still waiting to see what the officials think.
Well, here's
that is Whitewater football.
Yeah. Here's what happened. Greg McKaylee tucked it. Everybody's covered. He tucks it in and runs. Leaves from about the 2 yard line and is hit as he he's not close enough to the goal line. He didn't go over the goal line. He's hit, and as he spins, the ball pops out into the end zone. Whitewater falls on it. That's a touchback Whitewater ball at the 20, and a huge stop for the Warhawks at this point in the game with 6:48 left in the third.
And shades of 07?
Well, there was a big goal line stand, of course, in 07, but it was in a different situation in the game. And again, this time, McKaylee just breaks off to his left, leaves from about the 4 yard line, and is hit. Contact is made at the 1, and the ball comes out. The way he spun, McKaylee just was hit so hard. And it looked like 95 was in on the hit, and that's 95 is Wes Hicks. I still can't see the second number on the hit. But
it's Matt McCullough who comes up with the football.
And it may have been Jace Rindle. It looked like it was a zero on there, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was Rindle. And then
first and 10 from the 20. Up. Benson in motion. Here's the handoff to Coppage. Coppage picking his way up the field for a gain of 7 on first down. And it'll be second down and short.
And that's what Whitewater does, man. These guys, you know, not only do they bend and not break, but they stayed in the game mentally. You know, a couple of bad things happened to them. Missed the drive all the way down the field, missed a field goal. You know, they had the situation where the punt extended a drive, and they gave up two more third down conversions on that drive and still were able to hold them to a field goal. So Whitewater, a very resilient team defensively, and now that's the big turnover, you know, possibly that they've needed.
Brandis and Roosh out to the far side, second down and 3. Antoine Anderson in the backfield, came in to replace Coppage, and he gets the call. Got some room, goes right over Renbarger to the 40, to the 45 before he's finally brought down, as it was Roger Stewart coming up
and
to make the stop, and penalty markers come out at the end.
At the end of the play, and that it'll be very, I'm very curious to see.
Everybody's saying Whitewater does.
Yeah, and it looks like Aaron Rush, he kind of has that guilty body language, Roosh, and now he's taking his helmet off on the field too, of course, which is certainly frowned upon.
Personal foul, number 3 of the offense.
I don't know if you can hear it. There's some Mount Union fans here.
Well, that run would have put Whitewater at the 45-yard line, not quite across midfield, but that penalty is going to take all of it back, just about. The ball was snapped from the 32, and then they're going to walk it back 15 yards to the 30. So nice run by Antoine Anderson, though, and it was just a little extracurricular activity at the end of the run by Roosh. And the officials have said they've demonstrated by throwing flags that they're not going to allow that. Darrell Ely, earlier in this game, got flagged for doing the same thing to Roosh.
So they're going to knock it back to the 30-yard line.
And they do keep their first down, which is interesting because they gained
they
it.
They keep their first and 10 also.
Right. It was after the play was over. It was a dead ball play.
Anderson in the backfield and a pair of receivers each side. There's a handoff to Anderson. Got some room to the 35, to the 40, still on his feet. To the 40, ball's loose. Lineman falls on it. Matt Weber comes up with it inside Raider, Purple Raider territory, and putting a punctuation mark on a really strange run makes a big gain.
Well, first of all, it was another good run by Anderson. And
that's just a pretty good run by Matt Weber, too. That's a guard 15, 20 yards downfield.
Well, and again, that tells you what kind of team. When coaches say stuff like, you make your own breaks, that's a guy just getting down the field. Say, I'm going to be around the play. Because no, I'm not doing any good behind the play.
Right.
And Antoine Anderson, great run, ducks under. And at the sideline, made a few extra yards out of it, and it looked like it may have been Sam Kershaw or Drew McClain, one of those guys on the hit. It popped it loose, and Matt Weber was just standing right there. Yeah, I'm following this ball for another 5 extra yards.
First and 10 from the Purple Raider 48-yard line, and the play clock goes to 0, and this will be a delay of game.
Well, that's because we're all amazed that we're still baffled from the last play. We forgot to run another one. Whitewater had crossed midfield before that penalty.
And they will get knocked back to their own 47-yard line, but this is a drive, and you draw it up. I'm sure that's exactly how you draw it up.
Yeah, and the funny thing is the way that play ended took away from what really made that play happen, which was Antoine Anderson could have run out of bounds, and instead of just taking the tackle and getting tackled out of bounds, ducks under it, stays in bounds, stays on his feet, and gains some extra yards, and then when the ball was popped loose forward, you know, it turned into a big gain for Whitewater.
Anderson with the carry on first down back into Purple Raider territory to the 49, and a gain of about 4 on first and 15. Anderson on the afternoon, over 75 yards rushing now after picks up carry number 10 or so.
And, you know, with those two penalties for Whitewater, that makes 3 on the game, and it's cost them 25 yards. And Mount Union hasn't been too bad penalty-wise either, 4 for 40. And both of them, each team has one of those personal foul penalties, so it's really not a lot of mental mistake-type penalties.
Two receivers to the far side, Donovan out of the shotgun. Here's another carry for Anderson. Anderson, penalty marker down at the line of scrimmage and getting nowhere. It's going to be third down and long, and we'll see what the flag's all about. Roger Stewart with the tackle, and this is offsides against Mount Union. Oh, that'll put them in a much more favorable situation to make a second and 11 into a second and 6.
You know, if there are people around the country who...
Offside, number 9 of the defense, 5-yard penalty, still second down.
It's James Herbert getting whistled.
First of all, that's the second time Mount Union's had a penalty just by lining up wrong. You know, we had an offsides from Darrell Ely, and now
he
James
jumps.
Herbert, just a defensive end.
He jumped.
Not being where he's supposed to be, obviously, and not staying disciplined.
Well, Whitewater's always liked Donovan's presence in the huddle, and I wonder if, you know, if his cadence is drawing Herbert offsides. That's what looks like what happened there.
Yeah, and especially with those guys getting a little frustrated, Herbert and Millings now used to get to the quarterback and not get in there. You know, are they trying to get a little extra jump, trying to guess the count?
Slepsky, the tight end, motions out of wide right into a tight end position. Real compact set here on second down. Here's the handoff to Anderson. Picking his way through, rolls across the 40. Brought down by Millings and company, but down at the 36-yard line, a first down. And Matt Weber making a big block, helping Anderson get those extra yards.
Well, you know, the Whitewater offense across the front clearly has found their stride, and that's running the ball and establishing the run. And these guys are almost exactly 280 across the front, except for right guard Robbie Ustruck, who's 6'2", 306, and he is a freshman. The other three guys, and actually Matt Weber also is a freshman. Remember, they lost a bunch of senior starters last year, and those guys lost all across the front line as well.
Brandis and Danny Benson out to the near side. Benson in motion. They fake the handoff to him. Give it to Coppage. Coppage spins off a tackle. It doesn't go much further. James Herbert wasn't able to bring him down, but it was Chaz Jordan, the free safety, who did. It'll be second down in about 9.5.
And this has been nearly in the entire drive. Whitewater's running the football. And we've seen a team, it's happened once before at least, run the ball almost the entire fourth quarter and just wear Mount Union down. And I'm talking about the game at Mount Union in the semifinals of 2004. So if there are people around the country who are wondering, is Mount Union beatable? Are they perfect? You know, they do get penalties. Teams can establish things against them, but you have to be consistent throughout the entire game to really beat them.
3:05 and counting in the third quarter. Fake the handoff to Coppage. Donovan looking to throw, complete to Brown. Oh, Brandis drops the ball at the 25-yard line, right at the first down marker, and could not hold on to it.
It was, you know, ran the route. The route was run well, the pass was there, and he had it in his hands and just wanted to turn upfield before he pulled it in.
Brandis with the sophomore mistake as he had a ball just on his hip and couldn't wrap it up. Sophomore mistake, no. Does that not work?
Hey, whether or not it works, these are the type of things that Whitewater, they can't leave these on the field. They've already left, you know, 6 points on the field with makeable field goals, and now they had a first down, and now they're in a 3rd-and-9 situation.
Back to passes, Donovan with 4 receivers looking. Complete to Wells for the first down at the 20. Right there to make the hit right away is Chaz Jordan, but he was in front of him and made the catch.
And if you don't believe these other guys are paying attention to what happened, what the other plays do. You saw Jordan Wells. It looked like he took an extra couple seconds that time. Turned her whole body around, make sure he wrapped in the catch, brought it down. Didn't mind if he was going to get hit by Chaz Jordan. I'm just going to get this first down and keep it.
And Jordan Wells has made just big catch after big catch this season. He came into the afternoon with 47 receptions, but it seems like he has had a lot of crucial ones, and in previous years here, too.
Yeah, yeah.
First and 10 from the 19-yard line. Donovan up under center with trips to the left. Makes the handoff and gives it to Anderson. Anderson is leveled in the backfield. Loss of four, and James Herbert leading the charge.
And James Herbert is a guy who had 23 tackles for a loss coming into this game, and you can add another one to his tally. If he gets off the line, he's tough to block, and he delivers a hit in the field. Of course, he's going to come off the field right now, actually, and Clance Liggett is going to come into the game for Mount Union along the defensive line.
They pull the fullback and add an extra wide receiver. Anderson in the backfield. Roosh and Wells to the near side, and Brandis to the far. Second down and about 13. Dropping back to pass from the 22-yard line. Donovan, shaken out of the pocket. He is sacked. Sacked back at the 28-yard line. Tried to step up, get rid of, look for something to throw, but unable to do so. I think Sam Kershaw, the linebacker, coming in to make that, to wrap him up.
Couple things about that sack. It speaks to coaching, and it speaks to the depth of the program. Whitewater's been sustaining this long drive, running and running and running, wearing a team down. They pull out their best pass rusher, pretty much, on that play, and brought in Lambert Budzinski, defensive tackle, and were able to get that pressure. You know, because they have the depth where they can rotate the defensive line, and they know this has been a long drive, so let's rotate guys in. Now Warhawks in the third and 19.
And I've rarely seen Donovan take a sack that could have been avoided this season. That was a big one. Third down and long. Looking for the near sidelines and overthrows Brandis. Let him too far out of bounds. And it's going to be fourth down.
Another ball caught, but caught on the sideline out of bounds.
This would be a 45-yard field goal, and Shebler's trotting back on here. Now, in this situation at Willamette, they quick kicked and punted and tried to bury Willamette deep. I'm not sure that you can do that to Mount Union here when you're down by 14 with about, 16 minutes to go.
Here's the thing about this situation, though, is Whitewater's figuring out we have another quarter, we might get two possessions. We can move the ball on Mountain Union. They've consistently moved the ball, but they have to get some points out of these drives.
And a timeout here. As they're going to review to see whether Brandis caught the ball in bounds. It seemed clear from where we were standing that he was out of bounds, but we'll certainly take a look. This is something worth looking at.
Well, it's unofficial icing of the kicker. I think that's what it seemed like. It frustrated Whitewater a little bit. But booth-initiated review, when they see something, anything that they see that is questionable, they're allowed to radio down to the referees and say, hey, we're gonna stop this just to take another look at it. Doesn't mean anything's going to change.
And, just because this is the only time they've stopped the game, of course, as we mentioned earlier, doesn't mean this is the only time that they've looked at a play. They look at pretty much every play, and they just haven't stopped anything before. Here is actually, this looks like, this is a catch, isn't it?
Yeah.
1 foot in college, and he's got it.
But his knee, his foot.
I'm not sure this second angle that the TV is showing us is going to help. Maybe it does. I think that's a foot.
Inbound.
He is in, and I think
and
he has control.
Before his knee touches out of bounds. That is very sharp eye if they
well, they have HD in there, so we do not.
High definition does help, but to have caught that, it's very sharp because it's one of those plays where in fast motion it looked like he was out of bounds.
They're not going
to
look at the same thing that the TV is seeing. They just have access to it, right? So
they have every angle that the television station has filmed here.
Referee out of the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference comes over to the sidelines, is talking with the people up in the booth. This is not a first down here, right? This would be just a difference between a fourth and really long, and a difference about maybe 10 to 12 yards on a field goal.
Well, and the way Shebler's kicked, certainly that would help. But not only that, too, may change the decision for Whitewater. If it's, fourth and something makeable, maybe they go for it. At this point in the game, again, they've established that they can move the ball over the second and third quarter. So they're going to, when they get the ball back, they feel like, all right, we're going to get another chance to score. But if they can get a touchdown, they can make this a one-touchdown game. Then it gets real interesting. If it's 24-13, certainly it's pretty interesting. And they still have to get stops on the Purple Raiders, which the last time, of course, the Purple Raiders drove all the way down the field.
Frank Rossi from the sideline reports that the referee is asking for a yard spot here, so that sounds like an overturn.
Yeah.
Here we go.
After review, we have a completed catch to the 14-yard line.
14-yard line, 5 yards short of the first down. Thanks, Frank, getting your head in there on that. And so ball spotted up to the 14-yard line. If they kick, this would be fourth down and five. This will be now a 31-yard field goal, and the field goal unit is staying on the field.
So the decision doesn't change, which...
the spot changes, not only yards up, but from right hash to left hash.
And Schebler has missed off to the left, so I don't know how that affects it, but if he gets a kick sort of more on a straight line, pushing it to the right, he'll have the whole length of the goalpost to work with.
Working out of the hold again of Chris Russell. Kick on the way, again has the distance, and it is good. So with a minute one to go here in the third quarter, Whitewater finally converts on a field goal, and it's cut the lead to 11, 24-13.
Well, they tried to cut the lead to 11 a couple other times, and might not be a good job of being a color analyst to think about things that didn't happen. But Whitewater had a chance to get, you know, two field goals at least earlier in this game, right before the half and earlier in the third quarter. This could be a 24-19 game right now, but it's 24-13. 16:01 left in this game, 1:01 left in the third quarter. The Warhawks have to get stops, obviously, but they have to continue to convert when they get the ball.
I want to ask Frank Rossi, who was down there as the official review was being talked about, what he saw, what his angle was, what was going on down there.
You know, the referees just defer to what's going on upstairs. They're just waiting as much as we are. They don't look at the video screen at all. And, you know, all the teams, both teams knew it was a very close call, so nobody could plan on anything. So it was pretty quiet down here until that review was made. It was a pretty long review, but they feel like they got the call right enough to make the overturn. And then the referee said, I don't have a yard spot, so go back and get that for me. And that's when I knew that was a completed pass at that point.
All right. Thanks a lot, Frank. Keeping us up to date, Frank Rossi, our sideline guy here this afternoon in Stag Bowl 36. I'm Pat Coleman. He's Keith McMillan. Gordon Mann, our producer here this afternoon. And finally, Whitewater, after two previous failed attempts to get points, 11, 12, and 13 on the board, converts on a 31-yard field goal by Jeff Schebler.
And, you know, another thing we should know about the review process is the guys up here in the booth are certified officials. You know, they know the rules as well as the officials on the field, and they are the same guys, at least in previous years, they have been the same officials that tend to work the Virginia Tech games and a lot of other televised games in this Roanoke Valley area. So it certainly, you know, when you say that the referees on the field defer to the guys up in the booth, you know, these guys up in the booth are legitimate replay officials, and they're familiar with this system. In other news, Sam Guerrero will return for the Mountain Union offense. He's the guard who came off the field during the last drive for Mountain Union. He's a starting right guard, I believe. He'll get his spot back for Mountain Union when they come out on offense, or we'll at least be looking for that.
So Shebler to kick off. Wind picking up a little bit. He's got maybe now about a 10 to 12 mile an hour wind at his back, and the kick is away. And Petrozillo takes it on the 4-yard line on the right hash mark. Up to the 20, and he's brought down there. So the Mount Union offense will start there with the final 56 seconds of the third quarter going left to right, and Gregory Arnold with the stop for the Warhawks.
Man, the more I think about this game, the more you just have to be frustrated if you're a Warhawks fan, because if they haven't outplayed Mount Union since the first 6 minutes, they've certainly been right there with them. And, you know, they haven't gotten the points out of some of these drives they wanted to. You know, four drives inside the 30 and 6 points out of that.
Yep. Here's a fake handoff in the backfield. McKinley stepping up, looking to throw, looking far side, and just overthrows Cecil Shorts this time. Diebert right there on the coverage, the same kind of catch, frankly, that Shorts has made over the shoulder and up in the air a couple times this afternoon. But I think McKaylee might have had to get rid of it a little bit early because Jace Rindle was coming after him.
Yeah, and then, you know, Diebert, when Shorts went up in the air, Diebert just got the perfectly timed push on him, and it was too hard for Shorts to come down with it. And that's, you know, that's good coverage, and it's, I think it says a lot about Diebert and Shoney Shumpert that those guys have they got beat for touchdowns very early in this game, and those are still critical points here in this game, but those guys have stayed with it and made good plays, especially on Cecil Shorts right there by Diebert.
Second down and 10. Bruni out of the backfield in motion. Here's the handoff to Kamik, trying to look for some room up the middle. Gets a little bit across the 25 up to the 26-yard line, and it was Kyle Supanoski on the stop, along with Lane Olson, the backup outside linebacker. It'll be third down and about 7.
And Olson is in on the weak side for Max Ford, who made some big plays earlier in this game. And we actually see Anthony White run off the field in this third down situation. That's Whitewater's key pass rusher, and he's off the field in place of John Baldwin, of course, is on the other side, and his backup, Casey Casper, is in. So getting fresh defensive linemen has been a priority for both teams.
Third down and 6. Back to pass, McKaylee. Got some time. Look at it. Ah, Shorts drops the ball at the 38-yard line. Shumpert can't believe he dropped it. I think Shumpert thought he might have had a shot at the ball as well himself and is upset with himself. It'll be fourth down.
That was a bang-bang play for Shumpert. You certainly don't blame him. And really the only problem with Shorts on that play is that he tried to catch it up in his shoulder. And, you know, you're taught to catch the ball out with your hands in front, sort of make a web with your hands. And that time he sort of made a basket with it, and he tried to catch it, and it hit off his shoulder pad instead of hit him in his hands.
Big turn of events here. Cecil Shorts had two balls which were catchable for him, one which was catchable for just about anybody. Go incomplete on that series. And Mountain Union punting into a little bit of a wind here. And not a great punt. Roosh comes up, signals fair catch at his own 48. And the Warhawks will start there when we return. At the end of the third quarter, our score, Mountain Union 24, Wisconsin Whitewater 13. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36 on NCAA.com.
Did you know Division III Basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them every week?
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, they do. You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Presented thanks to Goucher College Radio and d3hoops.com.
d3football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, d3football.com.
Now back to the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
And Frank Rossi on the sideline for us as well here at Stag Bowl 36. 45 minutes in the books, and Mount Union leading 24-13. But Keith, well, that is a scoreless third quarter for Mount Union, and only 3 points in the since the 4:43 mark of the first quarter.
Well, Mount Union did have one very effective drive that was ended when Greg McKaylee tried to go airborne from the 4-yard line, got hit at the 1-yard line, the ball popped loose and recovered by Whitewater in the end zone. And then Whitewater went the length of the field and was able to get a field goal out of it. But I think the best thing that happened for the Whitewater in the third quarter is after they made this 24-13 game, they had the best defensive series they've had all game. Minute one, they have the ball back right at midfield, just about a 48-yard line, so not quite at midfield, but you know, you feel like if Mountain Union puts a couple first downs together, Whitewater starts getting nervous and running out of time to get the ball back in 101 before the third quarter is even over.
Yep.
You know, to start the fourth quarter with the ball in great field position certainly bodes well for Whitewater here. And the way they played that third quarter, they very much have a chance to win this game.
We turn things around here in the fourth quarter. Whitewater will be going left to right across your computer monitor and going into what's become about a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind. Nothing too severe, certainly nothing that Whitewater hasn't seen, say, this month. But, you know, just let you in all the factors. Of course, getting a little darker here as we get to, you know, into the 1 o'clock hour here. But of course, it's been overcast and cloudy all day, and the light's taking a little bit more effect here in the fourth quarter than I thought in the third and second.
Well, I think the wind is picking up too, and that's, you mentioned it briefly, but you know, there's a big American flag at the end zone that the Warhawks are facing now.
I feel like I had a Perkins in
and that flag. That flag is sort of whipping now, and
it's
basically
them.
Spent the whole day kind of wrapped around the pole, and so now you see this wind that Whitewater's going to be going into.
I formation,
all day.
And Coppage gets the call, heads up, or straight up the middle, across the 50, down to about the 47, gain of about 5.
And something you see that whether it's Antoine Anderson with the ball or Coppage, is that these guys don't go down on the first contact. If you don't get a good wrap up on them to wrap them up, bring them down. And those guys still have that burst. The arm tackles don't work. You know, push tackles don't work. You got to wrap these guys up, and you have to have your help, you know, pursue to the ball.
So Donovan out of the shotgun here on second down and 6. Rolling to the right side, looking for Roosh. Has him wide open at the 40, and Ely doesn't miss. Knocks him down right there. Clock rolling, stays in bounds, but should have enough for the first down, and he does.
That's... appreciating the fact that we had a 14-0 game 6 minutes in, looked like possibly it could get ugly, and now we've got a game here, 24-13, a little more than 14 minutes left. Whitewater's across midfield and driving. And you know, the story of the second half maybe is Mountain Union's defense bending but not breaking, forcing Whitewater into field goal attempts as opposed to letting them score touchdowns.
Gifford, Wells, and Brandis out to the far side. Roosh to the near side. 4 receiver set. Here's a quick out in the flat to Gifford. Behind the blockers, in front of him, the 2 receivers, and he gets knocked out of bounds after a pickup of 8. It'll be second down and 2, and Whitewater has run that play very effectively now 3 times this afternoon.
Yeah, he ran it a couple times out of a sort of wider, more open formation with 3 receivers just lined up all on the line. That time it was in a bunch formation, so it looked different to the defense, but it was still the same play. And yeah, Whitewater just gets the ball down the line, gets it in the hands of 1 receiver, and then has 2 receivers blocking out in front. And one thing you can say about both of these teams is their receivers are effective locking up the field, and that's tough for a defensive back to get off those blocks and make an open field tackle.
Robinson and Roosh to the near side. Here's the handoff to Coppage. Up the middle, he's got the first down. Moves the chains inside the 30. Ball spotted down at the 28. And another first down for the Warhawks, trailing 24-13 with 13:16 to go in the fourth.
Warhawks doing a nice job of using Lavelle Coppage to start drives, and he can sort of spell Antoine Anderson. And if this drive starts to get long, you know, they can bring in Anderson, who's a little bit bigger of the two. He's 5'10", 190, and Coppage is 5'8", 180. But they can bring in Anderson as they get closer to the goal line. And he's when he gets the ball, he's fresh.
17 plays for 110 yards of total offense officially for Whitewater in the third quarter. 14 plays for 81 yards for Mount Union in that quarter. Now the leaders, of course, Antoine Anderson, after that carry, is up over 100 yards. He had 12 carries for 97 yards and a score through the first 3 quarters. Changing up the formation here. Now Roosh split out wide to the near side. Wazikowski in the backfield along with Coppage. Coppage into protect. Donovan looking to throw. Gets rid of it. Looking downfield and throws it away out of bounds. He took a hit, but got rid of the football. And it was Chaz Jordan on the pressure who knocked him down. But he's second down and 10.
Yeah, good throw away. You know, it was kind of a design half rollout. And Donovan rolled. And really, his coverage was sort of bracketed, and he didn't have the route there. But he wanted to try to stick it in there. But then, you know, cooler head prevailed, and he threw it out of bounds. Again, and, you know, taking a look at these third quarter statistics, couple of interesting things jumping off the page. Of course, Nate Kamik, 20 carries for 78 yards, and Antoine Anderson has had 12 carries, and Lavelle Coppage has 11 carries.
As he gets the carry on second down and 10, he gets a couple yards out of it down to the 27-yard line, but it's still going to be third down and long here for the Warhawks.
For Whitewater, you know, Antoine Anderson's been the more effective of the two rushers, but they've been able to use both of them to keep each other fresh, and that's certainly key for Whitewater here as they start to try to wear Mount Union down in this fourth quarter. Big situation, 3rd and 8 on the 27-yard line. It's in Schebler's range, but he's been 2 for 4 today on field goal attempts.
Look, I got 2 receivers out to the near side. It's Gifford and Wells. Matt Roosh in single coverage up top. Back to pass is Donovan looking to throw over the middle and tipped and intercepted by Chaz Jordan. No, make that
the Mount Union interception. Right. Drew McClain coming all the way back. 10-5, touchdown, no flags. Overthrew Aaron Roosh, went up high to get it, got one hand on it. McClain behind it and runs it all the way back for six.
And for Wisconsin Whitewater to have a situation where they can make this a, even if it was just an incomplete pass and they kick the field goal and it's 24-16, it's a situation where it could be a one possession game. It's not a one score game because they would have to get the touchdown and the conversion. And then to have that tip ball, it's just one of those kind of fluke things. And then Drew McClain, right in the right spot at the right time, the strong safety, you know, gets the tip ball off the hands of Roosh. And just the way he landed with the ball in his hands, caught it almost in stride. Jeff Donovan was really the only one who had an angle on him. And McClain cut back at about the 10-yard line and took it into the end zone.
30-13, pending the extra point. Wilkes' kick is on the way. And it is good, so with 11:59 to go, now down by 18, and Whitewater is really behind the eight ball here in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, reminded me of a couple of huge plays going into that same end zone, huge defensive plays by Mountain Union. Kostelnik had a blocked punt, I believe, in 06, maybe 05, that was blocked, and Matt Rees ran it back for a big defensive touchdown. And then in the Bridgewater game, the name escapes me, but there was a big defensive play here at this same end. Right when Bridgewater started to get back in that game, big defensive play for Mountain Union. You know, for a defense that has really spent this whole day bending, not breaking, Whitewater has done not everything it's wanted to do offensively, but it's consistently moved the ball all day. For Mountain Union to have, you know, only allowed two field goals and four field goal attempts, and then to get that defensive turnover and touchdown right there. Just huge play for obviously Mountain Union in this game, and it says a lot about the defense that they put on the field today.
And at this point, the way the offense has been, maybe not necessarily struggling to put points on the board, or not yards on the, or not struggling to gain yards, but certainly struggling to put points on the board. That is a big win for Mountain Union.
It sort of took the air out of the entire stadium here, too, because we're getting ready to, starting to look like this is going to be a real tight finish, and both teams starting to get that nervous energy around them where, you know, I don't know, it just felt like the momentum was building. And then the big play, obviously, if you're a Purple Raiders fan, you're very happy about that because maybe you don't want that nervousness at the end of the game. You certainly don't have to deal with it a lot. But it's just, a huge play for them, and it's sort of taken the air out of the Whitewater side of the field. And now these guys got to try to come back on the field. Still a lot of time left in the game at 11:59, but certainly that's just a momentum killer.
We're waiting for network coverage to come back here. And meanwhile, of course, the score 31-13, Mountain Union with the lead on Wisconsin Whitewater. And looking for the official stats on that interception return. 78-yard return for Drew McClain after a ball that was tipped, overthrown but tipped.
You know, interesting about that play is that Mountain Union brought a blitz. They brought both the linebackers up the middle. Whitewater picked up the blitz. So Donovan had a nice pocket around him, didn't have to rush a throw, but it was behind Roosh. And it actually wasn't even Drew McClain on the coverage. It was Darrell Ely who was running with Roosh. And the way he just reached out behind him, tipped the ball up, and McClain took it back for the touchdown.
Short kickoff taken by Underwood, still on his feet across the 35. Ball comes out at the end, but I believe he's down at the 39. Official's a little slow to say anything, but this is going to be Whitewater football just short of its own 40-yard line.
You know, and if you look at the story of this game, so far, it pretty much is that the two Cecil Shorts plays early, and obviously McKaylee throwing both of those touchdown passes, and then this game starting to get tight, and you know, making Whitewater miss those field goals and limiting it to field goal attempts, and then that big play right there. Defensively, you know, the story of this game is not really Nate Kmic, I don't think.
No, I think so. I think it's almost as if the story is that it's not Nate Kmic, which I know is the same words that you said, but I emphasize them differently.
I hear you.
So first down and 10, just short of the 40-yard line. And here's Antoine Anderson with the carry on first down, up to about the 44 before he stopped. It'll be second down. I'd like to remind listeners or let listeners know we've put the poll out there. Who should be voted the most outstanding player of Stag Bowl 36? We have thrown out a handful of Mount Union players for you to choose from. Of course, in the event that the game changes, we'll wipe it out and start over. But, you know, they like to have these ballots with about 3 minutes left in the ball game, so we can't afford to wait. You will get a chance to file one official ballot. Here's a pass in the flat to Roush, and Roush is stopped. Stopped right at the point of attack, and the tackle by Drew McLean.
Yeah, the thing about the situation that Whitewater is in right now is down 18 points. Time starting to tick away is, you know, the last two offensive calls, a run up the middle by Antoine Anderson, and that same, you know, bubble screen type of play, quick hit to the wide receiver, and you have two guys blocking out in front. If those plays don't go for big yards, you know, they got to get down the field here.
Yep, third down and six. Down by 18 with under 11 minutes to go. Donovan out of the shotgun. Looking medium range, pass complete to Wells. Wells still on his feet, stretches out for the first down, just short of midfield, but should be enough to move the chains.
Well, we've seen Whitewater be very comfortable in third down situations, throwing the ball short of the sticks, letting their receivers make the catch, and then letting the receivers go and get the first down on their own. Wells right there, a couple yards short, and that could have certainly been tackled, and was able to make that into a first down.
Just their second conversion on third and long here this afternoon, now two of eight in third and long situations. But they move the chains just short of midfield. Brandis and Roos to the near side. Here's the handoff in the backfield for Anderson. Anderson trying to get somewhere and pretty much failing to do so. It'll be second down at about eight.
Yeah, that one seemed very different than some of his other run plays where he hits the hole strong with a burst of speed. That time dancing around a little bit behind the tackle, waiting for something to open up. And you can almost tell by his body language that that play wasn't really going to go anywhere.
Lambert Budzinski, the main man on the defensive front there for the Purple Raiders on that stop. Second down and eight. Two receivers to the near side for the Warhawks. Fake the handoff. Throwing for the sidelines. Pass complete to Brandis. Brandis gets out of bounds to stop the clock momentarily with 9:39 to go. And is going to move the chains for the first down.
It's an interesting situation, the way this game has gone. Certainly not like any of the ones we've seen before, but in the sense that if you'd scored this game, just taking every play into who won that play, you'd probably score more of them for Whitewater. I mean, they've been pretty consistently getting things done, you know, moving forward offensively, but the big plays defensively and offensively have been Mount Union.
Antoine Anderson with some room to run here on first and 10, up across the 35 down to the 31. It'll be second and short as Stewart comes up with the stop, but not until he picks up 8 yards.
Well, that's interesting that weak safety Roger Stewart and cornerback Ryan Renbarker in on that tackle. Those both guys in the secondary who are playing with injuries. Remember, Stewart missed a couple plays earlier in the game with a left knee injury, and Renbarker, of course, shoulder was in doubt and has been able to play today.
Second down at about three. Donovan rolling out. Gets away from Millings, gets up ahead to the 25, and runs himself out of bounds there, stops the clock, but another first down.
And Whitewater still moving the ball down the field. They've done it every day. And the driving, moving the ball down. You know, the numbers aren't overwhelming, but they've been in Mount Union territory quite a bit. And, you know, the problem here is, A, they gotta finish with a touchdown to make this game interesting again, and then B, you know, 8:35 and counting. You got to score three times to get to make this a game.
First and 10, looking left, throwing left out in front of Jordan Wells, trying to make a tackle or miss, and dives his way forward for the first down, down to about the 15. Picking off yards in 8 or 9 yard chunks, but, you know, I think that, you know, now obviously stretching the field is not really an issue down inside the red zone, but I wonder if Whitewater's just not capable of holding off Mount Union pressure for that long.
Well, part of it, too, is Mount Union's defense is sort of like a natural shell. If you play a 4-2-5, you have five defensive backs on the field. You've got the deep zones covered. And so Whitewater say, we'll throw take the yards under it. And I imagine Mount Union's content to say, okay, we'll give you the yards in front and we'll tackle you.
And here's the snap to Coppage. And he gets the carry for a couple yards on first down.
And again, you know, Whitewater picking up yards in clips. You know, we thought at the beginning of this game they were going to get real creative offensively. We saw the reverse come out early. And then it's been basically the bread and butter plays from that point all the way to just now, seeing Lavelle Coppage take the direct snap.
and the timeout, and Whitewater is going to take timeout here with 7:27 left to go, 31-13. And it is actually Mount Union taking the timeout, which makes a little more sense given the situation. We'll take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Stag Bowl 36, Mount Union 31, Wisconsin Whitewater 13 here on NCAA.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the Internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
Back out here in Salem, Virginia, the beautiful southwestern Virginia, the Roanoke Valley Salem Stadium, been the host of Stag Bowls since 1993. This is Stag Bowl 36, 7:27 to go here in the fourth quarter, and Mount Union leads Wisconsin Whitewater 31-13. The big play here in the fourth quarter, Drew McClain's 78-yard interception return for a touchdown that took it from 24-13 to 31-13. And, you know, some of the numbers we were looking at earlier, Antoine Anderson still sitting at 97 yards, 12 for 97. Nate Kamik, 20 carries for 78 yards, an average of under 4 yards a carry. And unless he breaks another big one here in the final, you know, 7 minutes of the game, Keith, we're looking at a fourth Stag Bowl where at least, you know, Whitewater contained Nate Kamik, but here they're not able to contain Cecil Shorts.
And that's pretty much, you know, gave them the cushion that they need to now have a draw since then. You know, you take those first 14 points off the board, of course, it's 17-13, and that's a defensive touchdown that's on the board. So offensively, since those two Cecil Shorts plays, it's been Warhawks 13, Mount Union 10, but Mount Union finding ways to get the ball, obviously, get the points on the board.
Warhawks driving here, Wazikowski in motion, second and five from the 10. Anderson tries to cut and loses his footing, falls forward to about the 8. Clock rolling. No, clock stopped.
And as Antoine Anderson goes over 100 yards, that's his fourth consecutive 100-yard game in these playoffs. And again, he's going to spend a lot of the season behind Lavelle Coppedge, but he seems to emerge. It looked like in this game he's been the better runner, but of course Coppedge is not 100%. Another thing about this half, Whitewater is outgaining Mount Union well into now 140 to 81. Mount Union has 81 yards here in the second half.
Third down and 3. Donovan, quick pass for Brandis. Going to be stopped up short of the end zone, but will move the chains for the first down. Clock stops momentarily with 7:02 to go, and Whitewater, you know, chipping away yards here, yards there, but still down by 18 with a little over 7 minutes to go.
Well, one thing you can say is, okay, if you make it 31-20 here, you know, again, under the seven-minute mark, it's taking a long time to score. They have to kick off. They're going to have to get a stop right away, and they're going to have to score again, and they're going to have to get the ball back again.
But there's a handoff to Anderson, who pushes his way forward towards the end zone. Line judge is running up, and they signal touchdown. Yeah.
And I think Mount Union looks at the time of that drive and says, yeah, you know, we gave up a touchdown. That's never good. But that's sort of a, you know, at the 6:46 mark now.
Yeah, that's a 5-minute, 13-second drive.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, another one of those, and you're down. You're inside under 2 minutes. And it's going to take Whitewater a couple more scores here.
Shebler on to attempt the extra point. Good snap, kick on the way, and the kick is good. So, cuts the lead to 31-20 with 6:46 to go. But, you know, again, as Keith just laid out for us a moment ago, there's a lot of things that have to happen for Whitewater to get back into this game. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back after this. There's 6:46 to go in the ballgame. It's 31-20. Mount Union with the lead here in Stag Bowl 36.
Did you know Division III basketball has a radio show completely dedicated to them? every week.
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, they do. It's the blood of a champion. You can tune into Hoopsville every Sunday night from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern, live on your computer. Just go to d3hoops.com and click on the Hoopsville link for more information. Because if you're a Division III basketball fan, you've got to listen to Hoopsville. Hoopsville is presented thanks to Goucher College Radio and d3hoops.com.
D3Football.com is your home on the internet for all the excitement of Division III football. From interactive chats to articles from around the country on your favorite teams, no one covers the NCAA's Division III better than they do. Don't forget to tune in all season long as they present the best in Division III football with the Game of the Week, live right in your home. Don't go anywhere else. Get the info from the source for Division III football, D3Football.com.
To the Stag Bowl, presented by NCAA.com and D3Cast. Here are D3Football.com's Pat Coleman and Keith McMillan.
A 12-play, 61-yard drive that took 5 minutes and 5 seconds off the clock did result in an Antoine Anderson touchdown run, but the Warhawks find themselves behind the 8-ball here, down 31-20 with 6:46 to go here in the fourth quarter.
If they don't find a way to pull this thing out, I think they got plenty of reason to be kicking themselves about this game.
Talking about kicking themselves, we talk about kicking onside here with 6:46 to go.
I think the way they're driving, they need to. But the problem is, if you don't get it, you know, it's pretty much over. And maybe you don't want to put yourself in that situation. So the other thing too about kick it deep is it's free yards.
And they're
if
kicking
you get the
here.
Ball back.
And back deep to receive, back at the 10-yard line. Straight up the middle, and a nice tackle for Whitewater, flying down the field to make the hit. Jay Hancock, the backup fullback out of Madison, Wisconsin, and he just leveled the return man and stopped him dead in his tracks at the 22.
Here's the reason why you kick off there, because...
In retrospect, thank you.
Well, but you do. You kick off, if you get that stop, then they punt to you, you get the ball out around midfield, whereas if you onside kick it, and you don't get it, and then there's a stop, then they, you know, you have much more field to deal with. So it is almost like free yardage in the situation. You got to get a defensive stop at one point or another anyway. You might as well kick it deep, pull for the defensive stop, and then have a short field to work with. The problem is Whitewater only has two timeouts because they used one on a third down situation in the third quarter.
So Mount Union starting at its own 23-yard line, and here's the give to Kamik, trying to get around the right side. Does squirt through for a few yards and gets all the way down for the first down before Max Ford brings him down about 11 yards down.
Part of the problem with that play is Whitewater's defense didn't get lined up correctly. Jace Rendell actually punched Kyle Sapanowski in the face trying to get him lined up and knocked him down a little bit. And they got up and got in position. But just as that happened, the play was getting snapped and Kamik was running outside, which we haven't seen a whole lot of today.
Gain of 9 officially, so it'll be second down and a short one. Don't forget, we'll have all sorts of post-game coverage for you. We'll bring you the post-game news conferences and then our post-game analysis as well. All sorts of things left here on our Stag Bowl 36 coverage. And here's the second down and short, and it's short. I think it's short of the first down depending on the spot, and John Baldwin, Justin Ankley in there.
And Kamik did a nice job of avoiding a tackle.
It is a first down
in the backfield. You know, to keep that from being a lost yardage play and get the first down, only needed, of course, a yard. But that's a big yard because the clock keeps moving. Whitewater hasn't dipped into their timeouts yet. But as the first down chains get reset, the clock stops at 5:56 briefly and then keeps ticking.
McKaylee out of the shotgun here on first down and 10 from the 33. Gets a call from the sidelines, takes the snap. Drops back, in trouble, and brought down. Brought down Jace Rendell. Comes in there to bring him down for the sack.
And now Whitewater sort of has to take some risks defensively to try to get after Mount Union. They're going to tee off on him. And if Greg McKaylee can't get rid of it and catch him one time in one of those blitzes, then Whitewater's going to get the ball back pretty quickly here. Again, same problem we've been detailing. The Warhawks missing those 6 points, it would be a 31-26 game if all else would have happened the same, but Whitewater had made those two field goals.
The second down and 14. McKaylee
looking for Shorts, throws. Shorts comes back for it at the 39-yard line. A short of the first down to be third down at about 5.
A nice comeback route for Shorts to get open, and he runs really crisp routes, and he's certainly been a tough guy to cover. Obviously was early in the game, and he sort of went away for a while there. 6 catches for 167 yards. I believe those were all in the first half. I believe that's his first catch of the second half. Right after Whitewater scored that last touchdown, 6:46 mark of the fourth quarter, here's what the total offense numbers looked like in the game. It was Mount Union 44 plays for 389 yards total. A lot of those coming, of course, in the first 6 minutes. And Whitewater 69 plays, so 25 more plays than Mount Union for 368 yards. And of course, they've had the 6 kickoff returns for 166 yards, which has been a big part of their field position as well. Whitewater, believe it or not, this is a surprising stat, 4 times in the red zone, scored all 4 times. But
right.
2 field goal attempts from just outside the red zone were very key misses in this game, especially as it's set now, 31-20 with 4:40 to go.
The officials just called up to get the game clock reset too, so that clock may change momentarily. But under 5 minutes to go, 31-20 Purple Raiders with the lead and the football. And, you know, looking like they're... Yeah, less than 5 minutes away, obviously, from adding a 10th Walnut and Bronze to that storied collection.
Yeah, but a very different group. You know, outside of Nate Kamik, and Greg McKaylee, Chad Reynolds, and Luke Summers, you know, none of these guys started, and they had 7 starting spots different from last year's Stag Bowl. A lot of guys on defense are different, very few guys except for Darrell Ely. And, you know, some of the other guys rotated in and played. And Joseph Millings, I think, played in that game last year. But a lot of these other guys are new to the team. So, you know, even to some extent it's old to see the Purple Raiders back here, to see the Warhawks back here. They're new groups, and they take this championship experience seriously because it's new to them.
You know, talking about groups, this is a Mount Union group here from 05 to 08, you know, kind of built around McKaylee, Kamik, and then, you know, Short / Garcon. This is a group that is looking like it's going to win 3 titles. You know, there was a Mount Union group from 2000 to 2003, which we all saw here, you know, kind of based around Adamson and Campbell and Moore and, you know, Pugh and you know, I think Randy Knapp there at the end. They won 3 titles as well. I have a feeling which I think is the better group, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
Well, that's the fun argument, of course, that Mount Union alums will probably always have is the first, the 97, 98, that group.
Right, yeah.
Right there. Is that the best group? Is the 2001, 02, that the best group? Or is this the best group here? They got to finish the job, but if they do, it's certainly an argument for these guys.
I think so, too. I think they've had obviously they've had just 1 Stag Bowl opponent all this time, but they've had a pretty strong one.
And them winning last year shows that it's been a tough opponent each time.
Shorts coming back in motion, dropping back to passes, McKaylee, and pass incomplete, thrown a little bit low, and unable to come up with it there.
Deibert may have been there a little early, too, but, you know, if we talk a little bit about these sort of big picture type things, Mount Union, you know, they play it down, the fact that they lost here last year, and Nate Kamik said in the pregame that, you know, they didn't think about it once the season started, but it was a theme in their offseason workouts that they lost, and they obviously weren't as good as they thought they were, or they obviously had some getting better to do in the offseason. I don't think that kind of stuff doesn't stick with them, especially Larry Karras, as competitive as we know him to be.
Carpenter on to punt, and he gets the punt away. And it rolls past Roosh, almost touches him, rolls inside the 15 down to the 10. Carpenter stepped up, looked like he might run it, then kicked it, then got knocked down, was looking for a flag, but I don't know if he realized he was knocked down by his own man.
Well, not only that, if you're running out of time, Whitewater's really got to field that punt, and granted, you can't risk it, but you cost yourself 12, maybe 15 yards by not being able to field that punt and letting it take a Mount Union bounce. You'll start with the ball now on the 13-yard line with 4:24 left, and you need 11 points. Can be done with 2 scores, but
absolutely.
You need all the help you can get or all the help you can give yourself. Warhawks did get out of that possession, you know, got a defensive stop, only used 1 timeout, and they will have 1 left if they need it again at some point.
So the Whitewater offense comes back out. They showed a little no-huddle / hurry up early on. Here's a handoff to Anderson, sidesteps the tackler, picks his way forward to 15 to 16, clock rolling, 4:18 and counting. One timeout left for the Warhawks, and they gain four.
Yeah, that's a pretty nice run early in the game when you're trying to establish yourself and you're trying to get a nice drive going. But when you need two scores and you have 4:24 left, you got to get more than 4 yards out of your place.
Here's a pass by Donovan over the middle, complete to Wells for the first down, the 25-28. Yeah. Short of the couldn't get out of bounds.
Yeah, I guess it's nitpicking at this point. You get a first down, you need everything you can get. But the line did a great job of giving Jeff Donovan plenty of time on that play to find Jordan Wells coming across the formation. But yeah, Wells got to make a bigger effort to get out of bounds.
Stop the clock momentarily and rolled for another 4 seconds after it was reset. The ball comes loose on a sack, and it's covered by Rob Gilbreth, the right tackle. But loss of a couple yards, and the clock stops, and Whitewater has to take a timeout here, or
no,
they're going to restart the clock. I'm sorry.
And, a very alert play, obviously, by the tackle, Gilbreth.
And Herbert picks up sack number 15.
Yeah, and Whitewater's back on it.
Back to passes, Donovan on second down and long, looking for the sidelines for Brandis. Brandis has to come back to get the ball. He didn't get out of bounds.
Yep. You can't roll out of bounds at college, so the clock.
Yep, chains move, so the clock stops for the moment with 3:26 to go until they reset here.
You know, if Whitewater could do that consistently, they'll have a chance at an onside kick and maybe a long Shebler field goal.
Donovan, back to pass, first and 10 from the 42. Looking in territory, and Purple Raider territory, big catch and a big hit. Stewart drills Roosh, but Roosh gets the first down, 3:14 to go at the 40.
But, man, now Whitewater's chugging. And yep. If they're able to get this touchdown and this conversion, then you got a three-point game. And how nice would it be for Jeff Shebler to have an opportunity to tie the game after missing two critical kicks?
Back to pass, looking for the sidelines. Pass complete to Wells, who gets out of bounds with 3:07 to go. Clock stops until they reset because we're not under 2 minutes. But it stops the clock momentarily at 3:07. Second down of four, ball on the 34 of Mount Union. Anything about spiking it here, I don't know. Second down and four, but they're going to rush it up. Clock under three.
Yeah, I don't think give away any plays at this point. They need yards.
Back to either side. They need seconds, too. Out of the backfield to Slutsky, and Slutsky is dropped short of the first down. Is he? He's going to say he's just short of the 30-yard line. He has to be right on the 30. Clock rolling. 2:43, third down and one.
I wouldn't be surprised if they run here to get the first down.
Donovan brings him up under center. He's calling the play on his way there. Donovan on the keeper goes up. Oh, boy, not a great first effort. He's going to be there, but not by much.
But you got to have the first. Maybe now is when you burn the timeout.
Clock stops with 2:28. They could also spike the ball when they come up.
You know what? But the other thing is they have to save that timeout if they need to kick.
Yeah, and they're going to have to measure here, too. They're going to want to measure.
Well, that's great because they got themselves a free timeout, and they'll be lined up. Whether it's good or not, they'll be lined up on the line.
With two line. Options, one for a fourth and inches and one for a first and 30.
Exactly, and I'm sure if it's fourth and inches, they'll sneak it again.
30 yards from the end zone. I'm projecting to the end zone at this point, dude. 8 and 9 yards is not going to get it done here this afternoon.
They certainly have
first
to take
down.
Not only do they have to take a shot, but as the field's gotten compressed, Mount Union's been good in the red zone most of this game anyway, me forcing Whitewater to take field goal attempts, so you might want to take your shot, right? Like you said, Pat, from this far out.
Two receivers to the far side. It's Brandis and Gifford. It's Roosh to the near side. Back to pass is Donovan looking far, looking to throw to the sidelines for Brandis. Gets the catch. Brandis can't get out of bounds. Excellent job wrapping up and keeping him in by, it looks like, Ely, and the clock is rolling.
The thing that's going to have to happen if you have to take that shot into the end zone is somebody's going to have to make a great catch because you got five defensive backs on the field for Mount Union. You have two safeties playing deep help over everything.
Second and one. Pass out to the flat, and Gifford gets it and gets out of bounds. 2:02, so the clock will start as soon as they reset it at the ball at the 16. Again, Whitewater trailing by 11, 31-20 here in Stag Bowl 36. 2:02 and counting. And Whitewater has one timeout left. They need two scores, and one of them has to have a two-point conversion. Back to pass is Donovan. Going to step up, roll near side. Pass complete to Roosh. Roosh going to cut it upfield to the 5, and he gets out of bounds inside the 5. First and goal in under 2 minutes.
Risky move by Roosh because he turned it back into the field when he had an opportunity to just run out of bounds, but he got a few extra yards, and now Whitewater's looking at 1:49. Here's now where they could settle it down a little bit. Be quick, but don't hurry. If they got to get these, they need 8 points here.
Yes.
So they can't
they can't do anything but get 8 points out of this. So they can't rush it. Get the points, then work with your onside kick, try to get the ball back and have a field goal attempt.
They're going to send Gifford and Wells out wide to the far side, Roos to the near side. They do have Antoine Anderson in the backfield, along with, of course, Donovan in the shotgun. And here's the handoff to Anderson. Anderson has room, and Anderson stacked up at the goal line, and I thought he was in, but they're going to say he's short. Second down, 1:40 and rolling
here. That's
going
to cost him maybe 30 seconds or 20 seconds, however long it takes.
Very close to getting in.
He got tackled at about 1:44.
Nope. So Donovan up under center. He's going to try to take it himself, and we're still waiting for an official ruling here. Hello. Minute 23, 22.
Stop the clock.
They say he's short of the end zone. No touchdown signal. Minute 15 is where the clock is holding.
Well, that play ended well into the 120, so they may...
Donovan back up under center. Donovan goes off left guard, and this time he's in. Touchdown with a minute 13, minute 12 to go.
You know what, that's not bad. Obviously, they got to get the onside kick.
And they still have the timeout.
Exactly.
And they need the two-point conversion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they could live without the two-point conversion if they cover the onside kick. And this is nothing if they don't get the onside kick anyway.
But you're right. You're right. So they'll go for the conversion to see if they can win it with a field goal. If they don't get it, it's 31-26. Now, granted, everything that just happened wouldn't have happened the same way. But if they had those two field goals, that would be 6 points right now. In theory, you know, they would have just taken the lead. Obviously, things would have been done differently, but...
So here's the two-point conversion down by five. Slutsky, the tight end to the right, and Mount Union will take a timeout here with a minute 12 to go.
Whitewater's done a nice job of not going away, not letting this game... A lot of times when it seemed like it could get away from them, the early 14-0, the interception return that made it 31-13, that's times when this game could have got away from them, and to see them fight the entire time, still have a chance at this thing. I mean... It says a lot about the kind of kids that Whitewater has in their program. They're just not giving up.
Indeed. Trail by five, pending a two-point conversion with 72 seconds left in regulation. Ball, of course, will be placed on the three-yard line. And Whitewater came out with a kind of a trips receiver set to the left side, Slutsky the tight end to the right, and Anderson in the backfield, and Mount Union took a timeout. And the first thing I thought when I was looking at that was that little kind of pass in the flat with the two wide receivers blocking out in front of him, which has been very successful.
The bubble screen type thing that they run. And they do. Problem is, you know, at this point, do you pull out something that Mount Union hasn't seen? And granted, it might be something you don't run a lot, but a lot of teams have these kind of conversion plays, and they just use them when they need conversions.
Same with the trips to the left side. Anderson comes out of the backfield in motion, empty backfield. Donovan in the shotgun, looking for a two-point conversion. Looking to the left, throwing for Wells, and Wells catches it, but he didn't get in. Out of bounds.
We may see a review. Darrell Ely with the push out of bounds, and he picks up the little kid and gives him a hug.
The little contact with a ball boy helping him out, rushing the players off the field. They're waiting to try the onside kick, but yeah, I'm sure the booth is looking at it.
And Lance Leipold's like, okay, forget about that. Let's get off the field. We're going to get this onside kick, and we're going to drive down and score again. We got a minute six.
You're looking at Donovan. He's one-on-one coverage, and the ball just hangs up there and floats a little bit.
Yeah, you really need to put a little more on that, and then... Well, no, the pattern's fine. He's right there on the goal line. And if the ball's thrown faster...
Well, he's coming back because the ball's not coming
right,
far
right.
enough.
If the ball's thrown hard...
You can run your pattern, but if the ball doesn't get to you, you can't catch it.
I think if Donovan puts that ball on a little bit more of a rope, that play's good. And that's you don't fault the guy who called that one or the guy who drew that one up.
Nope, that was a play that was, you know, about a foot short of doing what it was designed to do.
In any case, Jeff Shebler won't get a chance to... redeem himself, so to speak, with a long game-time field goal. However, he does have a pretty key role because he's about to make this onside kick. And this is the play for Mount Union and Whitewater. You know, Mount Union covers this. That's pretty much it.
Hands team up front for Mount Union. Brett Baker, Cecil Shorts out there. Chad Reynolds. Shebler with Tim Deppis to the left of him. There's the kick. And it is covered right away by Reynolds right at the 40-yard line. So Mount Union can kneel it down. There's one timeout remaining for Wisconsin Whitewater, but that's not going to do anything but make them snap the ball an extra time. And Mount Union is going to get Stag Bowl championship number 10 here.
Nothing easy about it.
Nope.
31-26. They got 14 points pretty quickly, and then it was a grind the rest of the way. I mean, granted, Whitewater scored their last couple touchdowns on, when Mount Union had loosened up its defense a little bit and was just trying to run the clock down. But by the same token, Whitewater had driven the field. Four times they were held to field goal attempts in this game when they had gotten down inside the 30. And that's huge for the Mount Union defense to lay claim to how they won this game.
McKaylee up under center, first and 10 from the 39, takes the knee, and Whitewater takes the timeout with a minute 9 to go. Greg McKaylee, who may well be voted the most outstanding player of Stag Bowl 36, and I think there's really just two candidates. Whether you like Shorts or whether you like McKaylee, I think those are the guys that are really in the conversation.
Yeah, Drew McLean has really the play of the game. The two Cecil Shorts plays, and then if you look at his final numbers too, it's going to be 7 for, however many yards he finishes with, well over 167. And those plays, they changed the way this game was played because Whitewater tried to stick with what they were doing, but every time they didn't come away with a touchdown, and instead come away with a field goal attempt, it put pressure on them because they needed to make up ground from those 14 points they gave up early.
The way the clock is rolling, they'll probably have to kneel it twice. McKaylee under center takes another knee. Clock will roll now. Whitewater cannot stop at a minute 5 and counting. 31-26, Mount Union leading in Stag Bowl 36 and less than a minute away from getting one for the other thumb.
Yeah, and you can't tell me this one isn't special to Larry Karras. Here's a guy who, nice enough guy, but hates to lose. And I'm sure the one last year, he had a lot of respect for Whitewater and plenty of respect for Bob Berezovitz, but didn't like losing to Whitewater last season. And, of course, it was Lance Leipold that coached that team. But as a competitor, that's what you want. You want to come back. You want to play the same team, and you want to beat them and say, avenge more or less the loss last season. And it's special for Mount Union because it's a new group.
The Purple Raiders stream onto the field as the final seconds tick down. 31-26, Mount Union wins Stag Bowl 36, the champions of Division III football for the year 2008, and champions for the 10th time in Division III football history.
And there go the fireworks.
And of course, we'll have more post-game coverage. Frank Rossi is down on the field. There's also a post-game awards ceremony. Post-game news conferences. You get to hear from both coaches, both teams. We'll talk more Division III football as the afternoon rolls along at Mount Union. Victorious here in Stag Bowl 36, beating Wisconsin Whitewater 31-26.
We got the fireworks going off now, of course, but we had the fireworks early. The two long hookups from Greg McKaylee to Cecil Shorts gave Mount Union the cushion that they needed to withstand Whitewater for the rest of this game.
Yep, they got on top early. Held on, got a little bit of help from the defense when Drew McLean returned an interception, 78 yards for a score. Whitewater had its chances and had a chance again at the end. Missed two makeable Jeff Shebler field goals. And then, had a chance and couldn't cover the onside kick at the end.
Right. All that is so very key because you can argue from the second quarter on, Whitewater controlled the game. They didn't dominate it, but they moved the ball offensively.
They didn't get points when they got down close enough to score. Four possessions, 30-yard line or closer, and four field goal attempts, and they got 6 points out of those.
But don't forget, the national championship and national runner-up trophies will be awarded in just a couple of moments. Oh.
Post-game ceremony will be starting on the field momentarily. Players lining up, receiving championship hats and t-shirts from the NCAA. Putting them on, mugging for the cameras.
And for Whitewater, this one's going to burn a little bit because they were so close, but look who they got back, just about everybody. They'll lose Mike Sherman, the senior left tackle. You lose Rob Gilbert, the senior right tackle. And then you look at everybody else on the offense. They're coming back. Jeff Donovan's back. Antoine Anderson's a sophomore. Lavelle Coppedge is a freshman. You got three interior linemen and all your receivers coming back. Jeff Shebler is even a junior. On the defense, Jace Rendell, the middle linebacker, All-American. That's going to be a key loss, but that is the only senior starter on the defense. So they got three seniors that this team is going to lose in Wisconsin-Whitewater. Yeah. Very good chance to, you know, if not get back here last year, certainly next year. Certainly do a lot of damage, you know, and it could be for a couple years because so many of these guys are freshmen and sophomores, not just juniors that are playing in the lineup.
Yeah, if you remember back here back in 2005, you know, we talked right away about the fact that both of those teams could very well be back next year, and they were, and then they were the next year and the year after that, and you know, just from what you just laid out here, these guys have to be considered preseason 1 and 2 for 2009.
Yeah, this was the year to get them. If you were going to get them, you know, so many.
Congratulations.
And here's Guy Seidel down on the field.
And two great sets of fans. I know the teams would like to thank the fans. First from Wisconsin Whitewater. And from Mount Union. Another outstanding championship game between two great programs and two great teams. If we could please have Coach Leipold to the stage. And at this time, I'd like to introduce the chairman of the Division III Football Committee, Mr. Dick Kaiser.
Lance, what a terrific season your team played an exceptional game. It was in doubt all the way. Congratulations, and you'll be back. We all know it.
Classy response, I think, by Whitewater. They're happy to have the runner-up trophy. Certainly not happy to have it, but could do worse than runner-up with a group full of a team with only three seniors on it.
Absolutely, you'd have to think there are 227 or I guess 217 schools in Division III who would be happy to be in this position.
Yeah, and you know a lot of fans would be happy to see it. Whitewater only has three senior starters, not only three seniors on the team, of course. But still a young group.
Larry, congratulations. Undefeated, 10th time.
Talking with Larry Kerrison.
Mount Union, national champion.
And yet another Walnut and Bronze trophy to add to the collection in Alliance, Ohio.
Coach Karras, a tremendous ball game between two tremendous teams.
It certainly was. I think all four games in the last 4 years have been great games. Great teams. Congratulations to a great team here. Congratulations to our team also.
Thank you very much. And we have one more piece of business, folks. If I could have your attention for one more moment. The most outstanding player of the 2008 National Championship Game, Greg McGailey. The Mount Union Purple Raiders, your 2008 National Champions.
And Rick Seidel presenting the championship trophy to Larry Karras and the Mount Union Purple Raiders. We'll waiting for see if we get somebody, get Frank to get somebody down on the sidelines for us. And again, the final score is Mount Union 31 and Wisconsin Whitewater 26.
On behalf of the city of Salem and the Old Dominion Athletic Conference and the NCAA, we thank you for coming to today's game. We appreciate your support. Look forward to seeing you all again next year right here at Salem Stadium. Have a great holiday season, everybody. Please drive home safely.
And I think when they say that, they are speaking specifically to Mount Union and Whitewater fans who seem to make a habit out of being here in late December.
It could certainly be someone else, and that's the beauty of the automatic qualifier system and then the 32-team tournament. But, you know, when you talk about, as we mentioned, Pat, those two teams getting here with the young rosters, the inexperience that they had on their rosters this year, you know, it's hard to forecast anything else. If you want to take a look at these final stats, you know, actually Whitewater's last couple drives put them over the hump in terms of total yards.
Well, actually, we're going to go downstairs to Frank Rossi. Frank, why don't you go ahead?
I interviewed you after you won the Gagliardi Trophy the other night. You looked relieved and happy. Today, you look even happier.
Greg McHaley.
What's going through your head right now?
Well, I mean, this is just the perfect ending to the season. We couldn't have asked for more. This team has really come a long way. They've grown a lot, and to see it culminate at this point is, you know, real satisfying. I couldn't be happier.
What were you feeling as you guys jump ahead, and it was always in doubt, this game, it felt like?
Yeah, it was. Every time you're playing a great team, you know, the lead is never safe. You never feel comfortable, especially in the magnitude, you know, of this game and on a stage like this. You know, we knew how good Whitewater was, and they've never given up in the past, and we knew that wasn't going to be the case.
The taping of your elbow seemed to be a factor in the first half. What was happening with your injury?
I just got a little turf burn. I don't want to start bleeding after coming out of the game, so nothing major.
So what's next? Are you just going to celebrate today? What are you going to do?
Just going to enjoy this with my teammates. I love these guys to death. Sad to see it go, but like I said, we're just going to enjoy this moment right now.
Enjoy it. Congratulations. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that is Frank Rossi downstairs with Greg McHaley, of course, the Gagliardi Trophy winner, the first team All-American, the Mount Union quarterback. And did we get a most outstanding player? I haven't heard a name on a most outstanding player, so...
Did they announce Greg McHaley?
Well, they should have. I just wanted to make sure that...
When Rick Seidel, he said, one more piece of business to handle.
Oh, that is important.
And then he called Greg McHaley up there.
And well-deserved, because Greg McHaley this afternoon, 12 of 19 passing for 262 yards and two touchdowns. Maybe not the completion percentage he's normally accustomed to, just a hair over 60%. But, tack on to that, of course, 8 carries for 56 yards and... You know, again, being the kind of key, really, for Mount Union this afternoon. You remember back to, as Gordon Mann joins us back in here on the postgame, you remember back to when this change was made, right? I mean, McHaley started in the Stag Bowl over Joris back in, Keith's shaking his head at me now. Oh, that's right. He didn't start. He came in
after
midway.
Threw an interception
in the
first half.
That's right. McHaley came in the middle of the game and kind of, you know, established himself as not only the guy that afternoon, but, you know, finishing up his sophomore year and setting himself up as the guy for the next 2 years, and he's done it. I mean, it was coming pretty close to, you know, McHaley being maybe the best Mount Union quarterback to have never started a Stag Bowl win, but he came up with it.
Yeah, and you know, if you think about it, I didn't see Ballard and I didn't see Borchert,
right,
both before my time, but for the quarterbacks who have won championships who I have seen, Joris and Adamson. He was a different kind of quarterback. Adamson had a rifle for an arm. They called him the rifleman because he had such a strong throwing arm. And Joris was a little bit of a pocket passer and a little bit of a rollout guy, but nowhere near the mobility of McKaylee. And McKaylee really added things to the Mount Union attack in terms of his ability to roll left and right, his ability to run off of blockers. You know, I think what put him over the top, at least for me, for voting today, was the fact that he didn't just throw for 250 something yards, he ran for 60. And you know, that was the thing that and Shorts was shut out after the first, you know, more or less after the first quarter, but McKaylee still found other guys to throw to, other guys to get involved, and he was a tremendous quarterback. You know, I think in terms of individual skills, if you think of the other guys who are All-Americans, Rupp and Swallow and Joseph and the other guys who weren't All-Americans who were very good, McKaylee really had the ability to be a threat running the ball and throwing the ball. As I think Frank is trying to get our attention, he's downstairs. He's got from Mount Union, he's got number 32, Drew McLean, I believe.
All right, let's send it downstairs for Frank. Thank you.
Drew, you had the play of the game by far, getting that interception. Obviously, it was tipped by a teammate, and you brought it all the way back 78 yards. What was going through your head?
I mean, just get to the end zone, really, make a play, but I was just in the right place at the right time. You know, the ball bounced our way. Unfortunately, last year it bounced their way, but this year we got lucky.
Were you nervous at all about what was happening in the game after that quick start? What was going through the defense's head, especially as that was happening?
Oh, absolutely, but, I mean, as a defense, we've got to hang together, play as 11 as one. There's no individuals out there, but as a defense, yeah, we had to stick together. They put up points on us. They're going to. They're a great team, but we held together. So,
congratulations. You enjoy it. Back up to you guys.
All right. Thanks a lot, Frank. Talking with Drew McLean, of course, the safety who ran back the interception 78 yards for a touchdown. And, you know, at the time, of course, that put Mountain Union up by the score of 31-13. Whitewater scored twice in the fourth quarter to cut the lead to 31-26, had a chance at an onside kick with in makeable time, not the desperation onside kick that they would have needed a miracle, I can't remember if it's 5 or 06 now.
Yeah, Mary Harden, Baylor, and Linfield, yeah.
No, I'm even talking, they had a shot here, too, this series, in one of the four meetings. But, you know, this was a legitimate chance.
Right.
If they cover that kick, they still have a minute to go, and they had a timeout. This was not a misleading score. Sometimes late touchdowns lead to misleading scores, and I don't think this qualifies.
Yeah, I mean, two things you come away with that I come away with impressed by University of Wisconsin Whitewater. One, Kamik held under 100 yards. He finishes the day with 88, I believe, or 89.
88, yep.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. And really, as much as Nate Kamik can be, was a non-factor. I mean, they really didn't ride him very much, and he had that one drive where they put together with Kamik that led to the field goal. That made it 24-10, I think it was at the moment. The other thing you come away with impressed from Wisconsin Whitewater is the fact that they got those two touchdowns at 31-10, where, you know, if they would have rolled over, the body language of the offense as they came off the field was clearly very disappointed, but they came back, they fought back, and they had a chance to win had a chance to take over and get another chance to win. And you're very impressed with Whitewater. And if nothing else, I think two things for Whitewater make you think that maybe this team has separated itself completely to the other level with, you know, Mountain Union at the top, obviously three or four championships, and then Whitewater. One, the youth, and two, the fact that they came back in a situation where a lot of good teams, I mean, teams that will finish top 10 would get rolled over.
Absolutely. And I think not only that, it's the combination of the two, that not only that they came back and that they were young, but they were young and came back. Because that is not something that necessarily, you know, youthful teams of sophomores and juniors are necessarily prone to do. That's something that, you know, a senior class maybe on its way out the door says, we're going to draw the line in the sand here. We're not going to go out this way. You know, that isn't what happened here. That's what happened last year. And you know, last year's Whitewater team, I think, rode that, in large part to that championship, not just the fact that they had the 24 seniors, but that the fact that these 24 seniors were on a mission, quote unquote.
Yeah, we alluded to it earlier as we wait for the post game in the post game press conference. Mount Union will have Cecil Shorts, Greg McKaylee, Nate Kamik, and Drew McLean will be there, four guys who will head into the will take the podium along with Larry Karras. But you know. as we roll through our post-game coverage here, you know, the question you get to again that the Mount Union fans and the teams that played against them will have, which one of the dynasty or which parts of the which part of the dynasty was better, the one that went 2005 to 2008 with the three championships and the loss to Whitewater, or the one that went 2000 to 2003 with the three championships and the loss to St. John's. And, you know, you and I were gesticulating at each other while Keith was answering
camera,
that
yes.
question. And I think we both feel that the better is is this later group, and justified by that, by the fact that the teams that they played in the Stag Bowl, frankly, were better.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you look at the group of the guys who played at that time, too, I think that especially on offense, I would take McKaylee over that group that played at Adamson and Bruni and Burkhart.
Yep.
You know, those are, I think that's a clear win. You have to take Kamik as a win over Pugh and Moore,
right.
although, you know, that's a tough
call.
If
you get Moore, yeah, if you get either one of those guys for four full years, that's
yeah, I think if you
call.
Combine them and you add their playoff stats, which
right.
didn't count for NCAA statistical purposes for some of those years,
right.
you get pretty darn close to the 8,000 and 64 yards, if my math is correct, that Nate Kamik ends up with here. You know, I agree with you solely on the basis of the Stag Bowl argument that these guys faced, you know, the premier other team in football at this time. And it's to the point where, you know, you said Whitewater separates itself. I agree that we're looking at a 1 and a 1A situation here.
As the Mountain Union, just to think about the other comparisons there, Garcon and Shorts against Randall Knapp, I would take Garcon in terms of pure talent level
yep.
there. And, you know, the defensive parts, and this is to take nothing away from the defense, but really over the years they've really been pretty interchangeable. Every
yeah.
year, whether it's Campbell or it's Herbert or it's whoever, they've got a defensive end who will rush the passer very well. They've got linebackers who will play solid. They've got great cover corners. They've got a safety that will make you pay from coming across the middle, or they've got guys in the secondary, whether it's Ely or Kostelnik or whoever. The defense is really interchangeable parts, and that's part of what makes Mount Union the dynasty they are.
Yeah, to the point where those positions tend to turn over a little bit more often. You don't have a situation where Nate Kamik starts,
right.
you know, 35 games
right.
in 2.5 seasons.
Yep.
You know, Tony DeRicchi is a guy who started for a couple of years.
Right.
You know, there's guys like that. You know, there's the guys along front on the defensive line.
Right.
Pat Williams, if I'm getting the name remembering correctly from last year and years before. You know, but yeah, it's those positions tend to rotate through a little more quickly, and you know, it's the other side of the ball where the more extreme comparisons can be made.
So it is Mount Union with their 10th championship, as the banner said and some of the signs said, one for the other thumb for Mount Union, as they now have 10 national championships at the Division III level. And kind of a neat story that I picked up in the parking lot, number 34. This is not a kid that we would have had any reason to name. Jack LaForce from Vermilion, Ohio, a freshman. He got a chance to dress, and he was one of those guys, and, you know, as we get ready for the press conference, 200 guys on the Mount Union roster, so it's not, and only 50-something will dress in the playoffs.
52.
LaForce is one of those guys on the fringe who gets to dress. His mother was very, very excited, and his father was very, very excited. His father won a Stag Bowl at Wittenberg in 1978.
Wow. It's been both the 36
right.
Stag Bowls.
Yeah.
It's mathematically possible, obviously, clearly.
Yeah,
mathematically
and
possible,
you know,
by a good margin.
I said to the mother, half joking, you know, if your son's a freshman and he's dressing, I'm sure we'll be talking about him as an All-American in 4 years. So that's all. If you're a defensive player and you're dressing as a freshman, that means you must be, you know, you must be pretty good.
Yeah. We're getting ready for the post-game press conference.